much about. So easy. You gotta put it in
perspective. Good to see you, man. Is it hot in here? I feel hot. Are you guys hot? How you guys doing? I'm good. You guys got any snacks?
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy!
4, 5, 6.
B.I.G.
You know all the cartoons and all the TV shows you see when you're young? Like, horses and ponies are always really, really cool and happy. They always got, like, a rainbow or some stars flying behind it. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, it's a pony, it's a pony. So, like, I'm at the petting zoo, and for some reason, the pony came and bit me. When it happened, and I turned around and looked at it, aside from the fact that the horse didn't look anything like the cartoon or what I saw on TV, it was like, dang, horse, like, I trusted you.
And now, what is your spirit animal?
I have a bunch of spirit animals. I'm a squirrel, I'm a whale, I'm a goat, and I'm a dragon.
Well, what does that mean?
I don't know.
Our feature presentation.
Oh, my God, it's raining!
Morning, everybody.
It's raining.
It's raining. What's happening?
It's raining.
Oh, my God, it's raining. What do I do? It's raining. I don't know how to drive in this kind of weather. What do I do?
Right.
Right. So was it terrifying out there, you guys?
Oh, my God.
Everybody making it okay?
Wow.
It's a solid, like, just really super light mist.
Yeah. Just
and it
enough
was frightening.
To annoy ya.
Right.
Not really do anything.
I can't believe you guys came in.
I know. I almost didn't.
I mean, I feel like it's kind of, it's really putting your life in your own hands there.
Yeah.
Go out and something like that.
I will tell you that something that annoys me is that, you know, you shouldn't drive too fast when it's wet.
Sure.
But too slow also is bad.
Absolutely.
And there was a car today that was going, I don't know, 40?
On the freeway?
35, 40?
Nope.
Yes.
No, sir. That is not okay.
It's absurd. And it looked like a relatively new car, so I don't think there was anything wrong with it. Didn't have its flashers on.
Yeah.
Just didn't feel comfortable going more than 35. It was really bizarre.
See, the problem is so many people do that on the freeway, and then guess what? It takes you 8 hours to go 4 miles in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I don't understand that, because it seems like you would be frustrated like we are, like everybody else is, about the time that you spend in your car on the freeway.
Yeah.
So at least go as fast as you can safely.
Agreed.
At least. Sons of
bitches.
Speaking
of driving, Kevin, you looks like you got a lot of new members of the Zero Club over the weekend.
How shocking is that?
I know.
People are really into it.
It's really
bizarre.
It's
become a thing.
I thought it was going to be something where you rolled up a newspaper and hit me in the nose and said, stop it.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And then rubbed my nose in it. I don't know how
Again?
You could do that. But,
yeah.
But so many people are sending pictures of their gas gauge at zero.
Right.
0 miles to empty. And
it's a badge of honor now. People are so happy about it.
Really
so proud.
Is.
Yeah.
It's shocking.
It's become a competition now to see how many miles past zero you can go in your car.
Yeah, people are getting really defensive about it, too. Like, oh, you're not even on empty yet. No, you are not in the club yet. Like, what are you people doing?
I had 2 miles left this morning, and I didn't even take a picture of it.
Why would you?
It's not worth it.
Now, were you thinking when you were slowed down on the way in today, does that kind of screw you up on the Zero Club if you've got it all planned out and then all of a sudden it takes 10 extra minutes to get someplace because of the rain?
Yeah.
Are you in danger of running out?
I can't do that kind of complex math in my head.
Okay.
I just look at it and go, look, I think I have enough. I could probably make it. But however, the day that it's misting, that's not the day you necessarily want to run out of
probably
gas.
Not.
Exactly.
But yeah, it's a movement. And I'm proud to have started it.
It is a movement.
I'm proud to have started it. And welcome, everyone.
It's only a matter of time before we have T-shirts and we have a theme song and meetings and the whole deal. So, hey, I know we have a very, very big show today. I'm very excited about including some live music, which is going to be great today. But I do have to play this this piece of tape to start with. Anyone see Family Guy last night?
Did not. Taped it.
Heard about it.
So funny. It turns out there's more tape on the bus with Donald Trump and Billy Bush. And I guess we didn't realize there was a third person on there with him.
Hey, thanks for letting me ride on the bus with you. Hey, you want to have some locker room talk?
I moved on her, actually.
Whoa. That's not locker room talk. I meant like good play, good pass, like that kind of thing.
I moved on her, and I failed. I'll admit it.
Well, as long as you didn't try to f*** her and she was single.
I did try and f***
She was married.
Oh, you're awesome. Hey, you ever thought of being president?
And I moved on her very heavily. In fact, I took her out furniture shopping.
Ah, sweet move. Was it Levitt's?
She wanted to get some furniture. I said, I'll show you where they have some nice furniture.
Levitt's.
I couldn't get there. And she was married. And all of a sudden, I see her. She's now got the big phony and everything. She's totally changed her look.
Well, it is 2005. Everything's changing. Which reminds me, I have an idea for this thing called Twitter, where crazy people can bash ladies and minorities at 3 a.m.
She's your girl's hottest. In the purple.
Oh, also Uber. I invented it, if you're listening to this in the future.
I gotta use some Tic Tacs just in case they start kissing her.
That's the cheapest breath mint. I thought you were a billionaire.
You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. You just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
What, like grab them by the hand?
Grab them by the...
Oh, my.
I can do anything.
Down below. Pull the hell.
He can't open it because of his tiny hand.
So there you go. Apparently, somebody else on the bus. God bless Seth MacFarlane. Why isn't he running for president?
He is the best. Amen. Yeah, he is the best.
I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
Right. All right. This morning's Kevin and Bean Show. It is Monday, the 17th of October. Got a huge show for you today. As Bean mentioned, the 1975 will be here. Little interviews, some live music. Always love that. Matt Money Smith talks Dodgers Cubs.
How about Dodgers Cubs?
How about it?
How about Dodgers Cubs?
You all watched right. a little bit yesterday.
I did. I watched the seventh inning like
and
I'm supposed to.
Right? And guess what? You didn't on Saturday, did you? Or Friday. When was it? Saturday.
No, Saturday. Saturday. No.
Yeah, and they lost,
interesting.
Kevin.
Interesting. No.
And they lost.
That's on me.
Way to go,
that's
Kevin.
That's my bad.
Yeah.
That's on me. Also on the program today, we have Tim Simons, who we love so much, from Veep and the new movie Christine, which is really just straight up positivity.
It's not for you.
Oh, I saw it.
It's not, but it's not for you.
Right. I mean, it's watch it during the day.
Yeah.
So that when you go outside, there's sunshine that hits your face. Maybe. That's what you need. We were at a charity event over the weekend for Ralph and his school, and the Foo Fighters were there. And he brought out so many different people, so many weird, like, incongruous people that you wouldn't think of with Foo Fighters. And then they would come out and you go, what are they doing with Foo Fighters? That doesn't make any sense.
Incongruous.
So we'll tell you.
I don't.
Is that the wrong word?
I just don't know what's happening with you.
It's the new Kevin.
Is that not the right word?
It is.
Oh, it
is.
Okay.
It is the right word, yeah.
That's why everybody's surprised because
it's
the right word
you should be using.
Okay. All right. I can accept that. Andrew Siciliano from the NFL Network. With a recap of week 6, and Lydia Hurst will be in studio.
That's the Kevin we know.
She's the host of Screamfest Horror Film Festival, so that's coming up this morning as well. We will take a break. We will come back with the Showbiz Beatnik. 106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. This is the Kevin and Bean Show at 5:54.
It is Monday morning. Our friend Ralph Garman joins us in studio with our first look at the Showbiz Beat. Hey, Ralph. How are you, man?
Good. On a Monday. Good. On a Monday morning, what we'd like to do is take a look at the top 10 movies at the box office, because people go to see the movies over the weekend, and you like to know, hey, was I the only one who went to see Birth of a Nation? Probably. But you weren't if you went to see The Accountant, debuted at number one this weekend with $24.7 million. Pretty strong.
How was it, Kevin?
It was really good.
There you go.
And I feel like I'm Anna Kendrick, and you're... what's his name?
Ben Affleck.
I feel like that's our relationship. Like, she's looking at him and trying to figure him out, and he's this weird... He does have Asperger's.
Right.
Which is exactly what Bean has. Right.
He's dead inside.
100%.
Can't relate to human beings.
And she's...
And kills people.
She's just baffled. Like, he kills people like Bean. Right. She's just baffled.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's that was Bean and I was watching our relationship on screen. It was beautiful. It's beautiful.
Did they fall in love in the movie?
Oh, God, no.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if they were like...
So it is different from real life.
Oh, sad.
Kevin Hart, What Now? His comedy concert film debuted with $12 million, making number two this weekend. The Girl on the Train was third.
I saw that.
In a theater?
I did.
Bean went to see a movie in a theater.
Again.
Wow. I'm
telling you, it's the new me.
You're crazy, man.
That's...
Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, fourth. Deepwater Horizon was fifth. Storks, Magnificent Seven, Middle School, Worst Years of My Life, Sully, and Birth of a Nation rounded out the top 10 movies at the box office this weekend. Donald Trump may be a little behind in the polls, but he's way ahead when it comes to Halloween masks. You know, every year they take a look at the most popular costumes. And the official tally at Halloween Adventure in New York City, which considers itself pretty much the mecca of Halloween costumes, says that they're, in quotes, billionaire tycoon mask.
Ah, what could that be?
See how they get around the legal ramifications, which sells for $29.99, is outselling its former First Lady mask.
Mm.
40-1. 40-1.
I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
The masks, they say, are huge sellers. And they've had to reorder the Trump wigs as well. The wigs are just flying off the shelf.
Sure.
So we're going to see a lot of that character at Halloween parties this year. So,
Ralph, how great is Alec Baldwin's Donald Trump?
It was very entertaining. He's just, that show's been on fire
just
in terms of their openings with the Trump and Kate McKinnon doing a brilliant Hillary Clinton as well. Very funny stuff. Lady Laura is in the news. She's finally smartened up.
Really?
Yeah. But here's the thing. Do what you know, right?
Right.
Lindsay Lohan has just opened a nightclub.
Well?
Something she's qualified to know something about.
All right. What could go wrong?
She's spent more times in nightclubs than she has on movie sets. Certainly. She's put in her 10,000 hours, is what I'm saying.
It's true.
To become an expert. It is called Lohan! And it's in Athens, Greece. Now, how would she open her own club? Well, turns out she's got a new rich boyfriend.
Oh.
Dennis Papagiorgio. Dennis Papagiorgio. And so she promoted it the old-fashioned way as well by posting a topless shot of herself on social media to get people's attention. And it did, and apparently it was just a big, wild success. So, congratulations. She says she'd like to open more clubs and spas around the world, as well as start her own line of organic health drinks.
Doesn't seem like a good fit.
Maybe she drinks healthy organic things.
So she just left America, right? She just moved away.
Yes.
Doesn't come back ever.
She's no longer welcome. I believe that was the official State Department release.
Oh, okay.
Lindsay, we wish you luck.
Do we?
I don't know.
I don't think
positive,
we care.
Man. It's Positivity Monday.
It is?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't realize that. Okay.
Today's celebrity birthdays. Felicity Jones is 33 years old today. We love her. UFC has a couple big birthdays. Luke Rockhold is 32 years old today. Holly Holm is 35. Eminem's 44 today. Ziggy Marley turns 48. Wyclef Jean celebrates his 47th birthday. Mike Judge, Allie, Mike Judge.
I love Mike
One
Judge
of your celebrity
so much.
Crushes. Mike Judge, of course, creator of King of the Hill, Beavis and Butthead.
Silicon Valley.
Idiocracy.
Office Space.
Quite the resume for Mike Judge. He's 54 years old today. And Norm MacDonald, comedian Norm.
Norm MacDonald, he's 57 years old today.
Happy birthday, Norm. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Speaking of Beyonce, Allie, I'm sure you saw this. Kevin, did you see what happened to her at her concert over the weekend?
I did not.
She accidentally ripped out her earring.
Oh.
And I don't just mean it fell out. I mean she ripped her earlobe, getting her earring out. Through the earlobe, yeah. And now her dumbass fans are ripping their own earrings through their ears and putting it up online so that they can be like Beyonce. So stop that. Don't do that anymore, ever. Okay? Okay.
I don't know. I feel like maybe we need to weed those people out.
Maybe so.
We were talking to Dr. Drew, like we do on Thursdays, and we were talking about Beer Mug and getting his prostate checked, which he will not do. He puts the kibosh on it. Too much pain.
He would rather die of prostate cancer than have a doctor digitally inspect him.
Right. And so we were talking to Dr. Drew about that, and Bean asked Dr. Drew a question because Dr. Drew has had the same thing. He had prostate cancer. Mm-hmm. But he was very he checked all along the way, and he caught it early, and everything worked out. But this is a question that Bean asked.
You are a guy who is very in touch with his health and obviously lives a very healthy lifestyle. I don't know if that matters with prostate cancer. You're the guy who got checked when you were supposed to get checked by your physician. How come you still got prostate cancer?
Because cancer just happens.
Oh, it's my God, Bean!
What kind of question is that?
Do you understand how diseases work?
That's a good
work?
Question.
It's a good question because a lot of people would think you will avoid prostate cancer if you're vigilant.
No one thinks that.
First of all, no one thinks that. Mm-mm. And second of all, zero people think that.
Really?
I think less than maybe think
just,
that.
Just checking if you have it doesn't prevent it. All you do is identify it early.
I guess that makes sense when you put it that way.
So we were starting to talk about Bean's knowledge, you know, of the human body.
Yeah.
Is not, it's odd.
Yeah. He did it with the Mexican singer, too, who had a heart attack. He couldn't understand how he could be alive over the weekend putting on a show and then have a heart attack 2 days later. It made no sense to him.
It was very confusing for me because, as I have pointed out every time you bring it up, he was in great health.
Right. Irrelevant.
But heart attacks, I thought, were mostly like, you know, you're super sedentary and fat.
Nope.
And you kind of bring it on yourself a little bit. But this was a guy who was out there doing a 2-hour show at the Forum a couple of nights before he had a heart attack and died. It was a disconnect for me.
That's the odd part, is that it's a disconnect because everybody else sort of understands that's just how it works.
I don't believe in being sick or dying. You know that. And it's very upsetting.
Which is just dumb.
It's upsetting for me when I see it happen to people. And I guess what's going on is that in my mind, I'm trying to figure out a way to make it possible to avoid those things happening to you. Like if you're vigilant enough, you're not going to die of something like that. That's what I'm hoping in my mind. But it sounds like that's not the case.
Nope.
Unless you change things, mm-hmm. Like maybe you go to, you know, medical school and then maybe you become a doctor, you know, 10 years from now, 20 years from now.
Wow. What?
Right?
Huh? What do you mean?
I'm saying, what if you did? We have the Kevin and Bean future phone. Do you want to hear it?
The future phone?
Should we call Bean in the future?
Sure. I'll talk to me. I'll talk to old man Bean. Absolutely. I bet old man Bean knows a lot of good stuff.
Hello? Hello, Dr. Bean here.
Oh, you are a doctor.
This is the Bean Hospital. Can I help you?
Hey, it's me, Bean. Hi, Bean.
Oh, Bean, you'll be happy to know I'm still alive.
Oh, that's great. How many years into the future are we, Dr. Bean, right now?
It's now the year 2036.
Oh, thank God I don't have to worry about dropping dead before then. That's fantastic. And how's my...
I'm very busy. I don't know if I can talk to you. I'm busy trying to help sick people.
Oh, good. Well,
I don't like it one bit. A lot of people keep coming in here being sick.
You don't like what? You don't like sickness?
Yes. One guy came in here. His leg was perfectly good yesterday.
Right.
And then today... A large metal object fell on it. Now it's broken.
Right.
How is that possible? How can one day you have a perfectly good leg, and the next day you have a broken bone? I'm very confused.
I see what's happening here. Look, that was just an accident. There's nothing he could have done to avoid that.
But he checked his leg every day. It was fine. He'd get up in the morning and walk around on it, and it was a perfectly good leg.
Right.
And then suddenly it's a bad leg.
I don't think it works like that, though, Dr. Gates.
I don't like it. I'm very confused by medicine. All those years at medical school were pretty much wasted on me. And then this other lady came in here with a head cold. And yesterday she had no head cold.
Huh.
But now her head's all stuffy and she's sniffling.
Right.
And yesterday she had a perfectly good nose.
Well, what do you think happened there?
I have no idea. It's very confusing to me. I don't like it.
I don't like it either.
I'm looking through the medical history books here.
Uh-huh.
And there was a time when Beyonce had a perfectly good earlobe.
You're right about that.
And now there's got a big scar in it. How does that happen? She checked her earlobes every morning and they were fine.
Well.
And then she pulled her earring out. How does that happen?
All right.
I have picked a bad line of work for myself.
Surely so.
Yeah, yes.
I don't like medicine.
That's a band we should do something in the sound space with.
What?
But, right? That'd be awesome.
But didn't you hear?
That'd be cool.
It's already in...
What?
What? Didn't you know?
What?
I think Wednesday, Kevin, I think Green Day is going to be here, actually. And later on this morning...
Good work.
The band the 1975 is going to be performing live for us in the 8 o'clock hour. That's going to be fun as well. And, of course, you can watch that through Facebook Live in addition to listening to it here on the radio.
Big Green Day Palladium show tonight, right?
Aren't they? Yep, that's correct. Yeah, mm-hmm.
It's all about Green Day all the time.
Have to tell you, with the weekend passed, I was all excited about coming in and blowing you guys away with my big celebrity sighting over the weekend.
Oh, cool. Who'd you see?
The phenomenal Richard Schiff, an actor we all admire very much. Toby from The West Wing. one of the stars of Ballers, so many other great things. I ran into him on the street the other day over the weekend in New Orleans, and I thought, I'm going to burn those guys with how exciting and exotic my weekend was because I ran into this guy on the street.
Exotic? did you talk to him?
And by ran into him on the street, what did you guys talk about? Yeah, did you go out for coffee afterwards? What was the hang like?
I didn't want to bug him. I didn't.
But you ran into him on the street.
Well, so that implies some sort of conversation, and you guys...
So you said, hey, I loved your work on the West Wing.
And he said, great, let's go, you know, get some jambalaya.
I just walked past him. I just walked past him on Esplanade Street. He was sitting in a chair getting ready to film a scene.
That story really is a burn on us.
Right, that's what I thought.
Because
I'm
embarrassed.
He's the West Wing's Toby. So then I was all excited about that. But now I come in, and during the songs, you guys are talking about the greatest collection of celebrities in the history of celebrities that happened over the weekend. What's this all about?
It was just the greatest musical event ever in the history of music.
That's all.
That's all it was.
It was great, but it was also super weird.
That's why it's great.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been great if it was normal. The fact that it was super weird was what it made it a once-in-a-lifetime awesome event. Kevin and I were actually socializing together over the weekend.
What?
That's when people get together that are friends and hang out.
That's right.
Why do they do that?
And then you do something.
But weren't you guys going to see each other at work today anyway?
Yeah, but it's so much better when we're together and it's not here.
Huh.
For some reason, it's so much more fun when you're not working.
Okay. All right.
You should try it.
Did you invite Kevin to this thing?
No, we came at it from different ends. What was happening was that Dave Grohl and I, our kids, go to the same school. And so the school was having a fundraising event. And Dave and his wife, Jordan, are always very active with the school and very accommodating and so, so generous with their time and with their energies. And so what Dave did, Grohl put together a little night of music at his studio, and then we sold the tickets for the charity to raise money for the school.
All right.
And so my wife and I were there because obviously our kids go there, but Kevin knew some people connected to the school as well, so we just kind of ended up all being there at the same time. And it was so much fun. First of all, Grohl throws a great party. I mean, they had a tented area with booze and food and everything else. And then the concert started, which was held at his studio.
Which is about the size of the Red Bull Sound Space. I mean, it's really, maybe holds 125 people.
Right. So there's maybe 150 people in the room at the time. And the show starts, and it's Foo Fighters. Now, just to see Foo Fighters in a room with 100 other people would be more
insane.
Than enough. More
of
than
course.
Enough. Thank Absolutely. You so much, sir. May I have another? And then you just bow out gracefully backwards from the room and say, thank you for allowing me to be part of
it. Even if they didn't do a full show, it would be worth going to see them do three or four songs.
No
you
question.
Know?
And how great were they?
Great.
I turned to Kevin. I said, what band, one of the biggest bands in the world, who sounds this good in a room like this just having fun, just jamming?
They're never not excellent.
They always bring it like they're performing at the Staples Center.
But the fun is the part of it that I think a lot of other bands miss. A lot of other bands, play, it's the grind, they're on the road. They seem to really just be having a great time.
And so Dave says, you know, we knew we were planning on this like 8 months in advance. And then I realized about 2 weeks ago that it was actually happening. It dawned on me that we actually were going to do this. So I picked up the phone, and I just called some friends, see if they want to come along and just have some fun and just play along. So throughout the night, some people are going to be joining us on stage. And that's when it got weird.
All right. Tell me more.
First person up joining us on stage was Lisa Loeb. Lisa Loeb came out.
Right? Like, and we were looking at her like, what? If you were to guess, Bean, of the top, 100 friends of Dave Grohl, would she have been in that list?
Wouldn't be in the top 1,000, no.
She came out and did Stay, of course, her big hit.
I love her.
And then she did, like, a Bowie cover, and it was she did Moon Age Daydream, and just, it was a blast.
So it's her singing with Foo Fighters backing.
Yes.
Awesome.
What?
Awesome.
Yes.
And then it was time for the guest drummer portion of the show. Taylor Hawkins came out and started singing some songs. And they brought out a few drummers you may have heard of, like Jason Bonham.
Oh,
I'm sorry, what?
Son of John Bonham came out, sat behind the kit, in. Then another drummer named Stuart Copeland, who used to play for a little band called The Police.
Stop it right now.
Came out and played drums while Taylor sang, and Dave and Taylor took turns on the vocals. Then it got weird.
Then it got weird?
It's not already weird? Because that's when Dave invited Jeff Probst to come on stage
sing.
From TV Survivor?
Host of Survivor, Jeff Probst, came out on stage to sing a little Rolling Stones action.
That's what we were asking each other. What's going on?
Probst was appropriately backed by another guitar player who took the stage, Paul Allen. Billionaire Paul Allen took the stage to play guitar.
God.
How are your heads not exploding?
They were. Well, by this point, they had already exploded. Now they're just headless people. We're standing there with just bloody necks because we have no
heads.
I mean,
when you start with Lisa Loeb, you don't know where the night's going to go.
You don't automatically assume it's going to be Paul Allen and Jeff Probst. I'll tell you that.
No. That's insane.
Or Perry Farrell, who came out and did a couple numbers with the band.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And then Sammy Hagar, of course, stopped by.
Well, you're just now naming people.
I can't drive 55.
Yep.
And a couple of Van Halen tunes. And then the night closed out with Paul Stanley from Kiss taking the stage. Did sort of the greatest hits of Kiss with Foo Fighters and Paul Stanley rocking the stage.
How crazy is that?
Wow.
So that was our night on Saturday. It was the most. I said it's like taking $100 full of quarters and dumping it into a jukebox and pushing all of the buttons at once, and you just have no idea what's going to come up in what combination at any given moment.
Is there any song the Foo Fighters can't play? By the way,
no, that's the beauty of it. Like they're the greatest garage cover band ever.
Yeah,
because they love all kinds of music and they know all kinds of music and they're such talented musicians that they can really just hang with anybody and rock any style and any kind of song. It was it was a real treat.
And there's also no ego. So if Sammy Hagar comes out and is singing, or even Jeff Probst, for God's sakes, is singing, they'll just play backup. They're not trying to upstage anybody.
No, they want you to shine when you're up there.
It was really amazing.
So anyway, there was a lot of laughs to be had, and it was really a good time.
It does seem like they're the kind of band that you could throw any song out, and if they've never played it before, they could play it, right? Just because they've heard it.
If they've heard a song, they can play it. I feel that way. Absolutely. It just goes right from their brain to their hands, because that's how good they are.
I mean, it's no Toby from the West Wing, but it still sounds like a pretty fun night.
No, it's not a guy you saw on television once sitting in a chair that you walked past, but still, it was pretty fun.
All right, I'm going to give this one to you guys. I think you guys win this round. Hey, we got room for your phone calls on a Monday morning here on the Kevin and Bean Show. It's called What's Good, and this is where you pick up the phone and call us on any topic. You want to talk about something that's cool that happened over the weekend. It's not going to be as cool as what these guys did.
It's not going to be cool as what Bean did.
Right, maybe you saw a guy from a TV show you watched once sitting in a chair.
That you said nothing to.
We'd love to hear that story.
If you got questions, you got comments, you got complaints, you know the drill by now. It's Kevin and Bean's What's Good. Your phone calls will be included. 1-800-520-1067. We'll talk to you next on K-Rock. Got a great show planned for you today, including Andrew Siciliano from the NFL Network recapping this past weekend. Lydia Hurst is going to be here talking about the Screamfest Horror Film Festival and live music from the 1975. All that coming up. First, your calls at 1-800-520-1067. It's time for What's Good.
Like we always do at this time. What's on your mind? Your time to shine. Come on and call us up and testify. What's on your mind? Your time to shine. Come on and call us up and notify.
All right, Ralph, you're here, so let's start with this very timely call on line three. It's going to be Joe in Victorville to get us started on this edition of Kevin and Bean's What's Good. Hey, Joe.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Good, Joe. What's up?
What's good with you?
Yeah, well, first off, I like to say I'm a longtime podcast listener now.
Thank you.
Love your guys' show. And, Ralph, I have to give it to you, man. You killed it for me in Yoga Hosers. I finally got to see the movie.
Oh.
Loved it.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, Yoga Hosers, for those who don't know, it's the new film Kevin Smith wrote and directed. That he was kind enough to put me in about two young girls who are, clerks, basically.
Yeah, basically.
At a grocery place, and they take on evil Canadian Nazis and little-foot-tall bratwurst Nazis called Bratzies. You know, that old story.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, I'm glad you saw it, Joe. You liked it?
Oh, yeah. I loved it. It was great. Had me laughing through the whole thing. I had no idea that was actually Kevin Smith and Johnny Depp's daughters in that movie.
Yeah, they're the leads.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy. I knew hearing that.
And Johnny is also in it. Johnny Depp's in it, and the girls are terrific in it, so it's a lot of fun. Thanks, Joe. Thanks for checking it out, man.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
All right, bye-bye. Yeah. Thanks for listening. Let's go to Buena Park, please. Line 5. This is going to be our man, Frank, who joins us on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hey, Frank.
Hey, what's up, boss? How you doing?
What's up?
It's all about that action, boss.
No, it's early, bro.
Yeah.
I was recalling that Scary Farm was dope.
Oh, good.
Saturday. Yeah, my virus still got it, man. She's still hot.
Elvira's still hot.
Elvira is still hot. Okay.
I had a crush on her since I was a kid, man. So, yeah, for her age, she's still hot.
You know, I'm going to be hanging out with Elvira tomorrow night.
What?
What? It's like really?
The week of weird celebrities.
Do you want Frank to come with you?
No, I think I'm good. I think Elvira and I will be able to just manage on our own.
Let me get word from that. Yeah, she had a lineup of Elvira
rituals, but... Well, we take your point, sir.
But thank you very much. I want whatever you're smoking, Frank.
Yeah.
Frank
he's having a good. He's having a pretty good Monday morning, isn't he?
Elvira right. is 65 years old.
Is
you guys.
She really?
She looks better than 20-year-olds I know.
But you know, the beauty of Elvira too is like the band Kiss, because there's so much makeup and hair and costume and everything that you can play that character if you stay in the kind of shape that she has forever, because you don't really age because you've got that specific look.
Yeah, but those bazoombas ain't dropping.
No,
right.
Bazoombas are for real, right?
Let's go to Sandra Riverside Line 2, please. I want to talk to her because she experienced Kevin's worst nightmare over the weekend, which is being at a place where Neil Young was performing. Sandra, you went to the desert trip over the weekend.
Oh, my God. It was so good. And for you guys who don't think it's hip enough, Rihanna did come out and play with Paul McCartney.
What?
She came out and did that 4 or 5 second song that they had together. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it went for a bit, but I'm going to tell you, Roger Waters, during Pig, did an entire Trump homage that was awesome.
Okay. I don't think I could have predicted that.
Yeah, the whole song Pig comes all about Trump, and they show him his head on the pig, and they show him.
Very subtle.
Oh, yeah. It was very
First of all, we all know that Rosie O'Donnell's the pig, okay? It's not me. She is a pig, all right? I think everybody agrees with me.
How are the Rolling Stones? They're 80 years old. How'd they do?
They were on spot. I mean, they did really good, and I know that you were talking about Neil Young. He killed it. Neil Young brought the house down. He really did.
Did he bring out a guest vocalist?
Oh,
just sing somebody else's song?
Because if he didn't, he didn't kill it.
And I also guess he didn't bring the house down either.
Come on, guys. Oh, you guys are the worst.
The house
Neil
to sleep,
Young
maybe.
Is magic.
Thank you, Sandra. Let's go to Peter and Whittier. Hi, Peter.
Oh, hey, guys. How's it going?
Hey, what's good?
So I wanted to get your thoughts on Rousey coming back December 30th.
How about that? Ronda Rousey. My thoughts are take my money now. It's been way too long that she's been out of the game. I'm so happy to hear the news.
Do you think she still has what it takes to take the belt back? Because if you really think about it, when Conor lost, he was itching to get back in there. You know, I've seen most champs that have that champ mentality.
Yeah.
As soon as they lose, they want it back. She took a full year off.
Yeah. I'm going to guess she's going to come back in pretty good form.
I hope so. Well, I mean, look, mentally, she has been so tight-lipped. She hasn't really been given very many interviews. We don't know what this process has been like for her. And remember, she was badly hurt in that last fight, too. I think a lot of that time off was just recovering and, you know, it being safe for her to fight again. But mentally, I have no way of knowing until we get closer to the fight. I hope so. I hope she's great again.
Yeah, that's true. That being said, I do think it's a perfect matchup for Rousey with Nunez. I mean, it can't get any better than that. The question is, after she gets that belt,
Cyborg.
If she fights Cyborg, that's plastic surgery to the face, like no one's business. I think they should just build a weight class around Cyborg first, build her up, make her a superstar, and then have a super fight with Rousey.
Nice. A lot of people say that it's been unfair that they haven't expanded the weight class on the women's side. We appreciate the call. Thanks so much, Peter. This has been What's Good. What's Good? 106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. This is the Kevin and Bean Show at 6:54. Keep listening for your chance to win tickets to Universal Studios Halloween Horror Nights. That is coming up. Details at KROQ.com. It's Monday morning. Ralph Garman steps in. Time for another look at the Showbiz Beat. What's going on?
Because it is Monday, we look at the top 10 movies at the box office. The Accountant, number one this weekend. $24.7 million. Then Kevin Hart's comedy concert film, What Now?, debuted to $12 million, making it number two. The Girl on the Train, Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, and Deepwater Horizon were the top five movies this weekend. Storks, Magnificent Seven, Middle School, The Worst Years of My Life, Sully, and Birth of a Nation rounded out the top 10. Bean, I wish you were here.
Said no one ever?
Well, because...
Oh, Kevin.
At 11:30 a.m. this morning, down there on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, Allison Janney will be getting her star. And she'll be joined by her good friend and former co-star from The West Wing, Richard Schiff, will be there on hand.
Are you kidding me?
To help induct her. I know you and Richard are buddies. You're
pals. We're very tight.
Because you guys were hanging out in New Orleans.
I did walk past him on Friday, yes. That's very exciting for Allison Janney. And by the way, you know, I mentioned I saw a girl on the train this weekend. Allison Janney is in that and is excellent as she is in everything. She's always great.
And Chuck Lorre, the producer, who, of course, produces her current hit TV show, Mom, will also be on hand. So she's getting her star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame. I hope the rain stops for
her. Same.
Yeah.
It's kind of a crappy way to have a ceremony on the one day it rains in Southern California.
Right.
Timing couldn't be worse. Congratulations to Green Day. How about those Green Day guys, huh? How about Green Day?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just in general?
No, well, they're a little special, special occasion. They've just debuted at number one with their brand new album, Revolution Radio.
Nice.
Debuted at number one. This will make their third number one album in their careers. Of course, American Idiot, the 21st Century Breakdown, were also number one albums, but they debuted at number one this week, so congratulations
good for them.
To those guys. And while we're talking about milestones, last night, The Simpsons aired their 27th Treehouse of Horror episode, but perhaps even more significantly, it was their 600th episode.
That's crazy.
Of the show. 600 episodes. There has been only one TV show that ever had more episodes on television.
Oh.
Can you guess what that show was?
Knock Knock Live.
Knock Knock Live had a few less than 600 episodes.
Okay. Now, is it a scripted show? We're not talking about like 60 Minutes or something like that.
No.
It's a scripted show.
It was a scripted drama on television.
Drama.
Lasted for 20 seasons as opposed to The Simpsons 28.
Was that a daytime soap?
Had longer seasons. No, this is a primetime network television show.
I'm going to say, based on 20 seasons, you're talking about Bonanza.
No, I'm not. Because that was 14 seasons.
Oh. You're so proud of that answer. Is it, I thought Bonanza was 20
Bonanza was
seasons.
Sixth with 14 seasons.
Hmm,
number six with 14 seasons.
Okay.
431 episodes.
That's true.
Bonanza was at number six, less than 600, 14 seasons. Not 20, but 14 seasons.
All right.
Was it in black and white?
And color.
And color.
The show?
Ooh. Yeah.
You're talking the number one show?
Yeah.
Had black and white initially, and then it
Leave It to Beaver
was on for long enough that it was color.
Not even a little bit?
Leave It to Beaver, first of all, never was in color.
Never in color.
And not a drama.
And not a drama.
Well, it was very dramatic.
Did not last anywhere near the shows that
we're
talking about.
When that neighbor would come by, ooh, the drama.
It was not dramatic. It was a black and white sitcom that never went to color.
Was MASH in black and white?
MASH was in color.
I don't feel like we're getting getting close.
I'm sorry.
Narrowing in
over all the cards. TV Western Gunsmoke. Gunsmoke was the answer we're looking for. Gunsmoke.
That's the one. I said Bonanza. I was thinking Gunsmoke.
Bonanza. Of course.
Sure. Yeah, of course.
Well, Allie said Leave It to Beaver, but she was thinking Gunsmoke also.
The two long-running Western shows.
We'll give you that one.
No, I didn't get it right. I'm just saying now I feel like a fool.
Oh, you're saying you didn't get it right because we thought you had gotten it right.
No, I didn't get it
right. Oh, you didn't.
Wrong. No. But I knew 20 seasons was, and I was thinking in the wrong show. Okay.
All right.
It's one where they'd always be like, hey, little doggy. Right?
Sorry, what would it be?
Pretty much sums it up.
Hey, little doggy? No, that was a different show, I think.
That was the spinoff of Lauren Green called Hey Little Doggy.
I think you're thinking about Lassie. Lassie was about a little doggy.
Hey, little
which, by
doggy.
The way, is the third longest running show on television,
really?
Lassie.
Wow.
With 591 episodes. Law and Order was fourth. Ozzie and Harriet fifth. Bonanza sixth. Law and Order SVU was seventh. My Three Sons, Dallas, and Knott's Landing are the top 10 longest running television shows in history.
Get along, little doggy.
Really impressive list.
Stop saying doggy and anything, really.
And any other word.
Today's celebrity birthdays, comedian Norm MacDonald is 57 years old. Director Mike Judge turns 54. Wyclef Jean, 47 years old. Ziggy Marley is 48. Eminem is 44 years old. Holly Holm of the UFC is 35. And Luke Rockhold of that same organization turns 32 today. And actress Felicity Jones soon to be seen in Rogue One. I can't wait for that movie.
Same.
Just 33 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
1 hour from right now on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock, live music from the 1975. This is the Kevin and Bean Show at 7:05.
Alan, you figure out where you're going to hang all your new Alex Trebek headshots?
It is kind of weird that right when I get my framed pictures all done, have to figure out where to put it, Alex just comes out and sasses people to the point where he's hated right now.
Yeah, he has. Well, he's always been a dick. We all agree on that, right?
But a lovable dick.
Sort of, but he also doesn't have any time for that, hey, let's meet our contestants part.
No.
He
no.
just never does, yeah. never has, doesn't care.
Yeah, he's very, very dismissive during that part, for sure.
Well, he has found out because there has been a tremendous backlash against the host of Jeopardy in recent days. Kevin, do you have the clip of him on the TV the other night?
I don't believe we do. I think
you don't have. Okay, so he's on with a contestant, and her name, by the way, is Susan Cole, and she's from my hometown, by the way, from Bowie, Maryland.
Hmm.
Susan is. She's a librarian, and she's kind of hot. I got to be honest, and she's into nerdcore rap. That's the thing that she talks to Alex about is that she loves these geeks that make their own songs about Lord of the Rings and stuff like that. And Alex just straight up like is so cold to her, and basically just calls her and all of her friends losers. Like, there's no excuse for that. That's not necessary to do, right?
It was
it may
savage.
Not be for him, but you don't call her people losers.
I mean, really, though.
No!
Kevin, no!
No, they're not losers.
No.
So anyway, so that gets out over the air, and then Alex starts hearing from all sorts of people who are into this Nordcore, including one who's named Mega Ran. Now, I'm not familiar with Mr. Ran's works, but he ad-libbed a little something, a message for Alex Trebek after that episode of Jeopardy aired.
Okay, so I just heard this news about Alex Trebek having comments on Nerdcore. I got a chuckle, and while I was riding home from the venue, I wrote down my thoughts. Alex Trebek, you lost a lot of respect. I gotta check you off the rip for coming out of your neck. Talking sideways on geeks, man, you a trip. Guess you hadn't heard nerds make up half of your viewership. Nerdcore is home to some serious lyricists. I'll break this down in the format you're familiar with.
Now, who's winning so far, would you say? The rapper or Alex at this point?
Anybody but the rapper?
you're not feeling it?
This host gets roasted on SNL yearly. Hosts a show for nerds and doesn't know it, clearly. Nobody likes a know-it-all, condescending blowhard, easy to be snarky when you're holding all the note cards. But Susan got the last laugh, 20 grand cash, and you're good at all my shows. You don't even have to ask.
And finally,
suck it, Trebek.
So there you go. Suck it, Trebek. Suck it, Trebek. That's how he ends it. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, yeah. Suck it, Trebek.
Is this
Roland? You be illin.
What are you doing on our phone, Roland?
Well, as you know, I can pretty much just break into your computer control system there anytime I want.
Hey, yes, this time you must be happy with what we're talking about.
Finally, you guys are covering some news.
For the first time ever.
It matters. All that everyone needs to know is that Alex Trebek must be murdered.
Well, I don't think anyone's saying that.
I think that's what we're all agreeing on.
Nobody.
Think,
no,
right?
No, no, no. Zero people
needs
are saying
taken
that.
Out.
Nope.
Needs to be ended.
No, sir.
Nope.
No, that's
finished.
Not true. Nope.
He will be discarded.
No, not at all. Look, he's got a lot of nerve as a goddamn Canadian to come into our country and make fun of our smart people, though.
Right?
I'll tell you that.
And plus, Nerdcore is where it's at, yo.
Is it?
Yeah.
Really? Because I'm not that familiar with it. I'm sorry?
It's dope.
It's dope.
Okay. You heard me.
Okay, I wasn't sure.
That's where you take nerds and rap and you mix it together and you get the greatest thing possible, which is nerdcore rap music.
You don't strike me as a rap fan, Roland. I got to be honest. You're painfully white.
First of all, you've never even met me in person.
No, true.
So thanks, racist.
All right, but wait, let me ask then. Are you painfully white?
Yes.
Okay.
But he didn't know that.
He didn't. You're right.
Just a guess.
Yeah.
But I also have mad beats, yo.
What kind of things are you rapping about?
Mad lines.
Do you?
Yes. And it's largely because I have a retainer, and it makes me spit a lot. But I am also a hard nerdcore rapper myself.
Wow.
And I also am bringing it, yo.
What name do you go
Alex
by?
Trebek. What's that?
Do you go by Roland or do
no,
you?
No, I go by MC Redshirt.
Oh, okay.
A little Star Trek reference, very nice.
Star Trek, yes. So listen up, Trebek, because I'm coming at you.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
You ready?
Yeah, please. We sure are.
gotta bust a cap in Trebek, or maybe use a phaser like they do in Star Trek. Trebek, you be illin' like you got gonorrhea. Oh. Jabba, it's gonna be like Jabba was killed by Princess Leia. I'm gonna whip out my Glocka, and you'll be screaming like Chewbacca. Because you're a dog, and you should be eating kibble. My fists are gonna multiply like they were a tribble. I'm gonna cut you down to size, circle Uranus like I'm on the Enterprise.
Oh!
Yeah, Trebek. Word.
Is that finished?
Sorry. Yeah, more or less.
Okay. Well, okay. I think this round goes to you,
wow.
Roland.
Ah, suck it, Trebek.
Live music from the band The 1975 coming up at the top of the hour. And then after that, we'll talk to our friend Matt Money Smith from the Petros Money Radio Show about the Dodgers bringing the series back home, tied 1-1. By the way, Kevin gets congratulations for doing his part, tuning into part of the seventh inning last night, which is what the Dodgers need to win.
I don't feel like I had any influence on the game.
Well,
you
games,
didn't do it Saturday, and they lost.
That's right. The games where you tune in the seventh inning are the games that they win, so you make your own conclusions,
total
Kevin.
Total luck. Just random.
Right now, though, let's talk football with our friend Andrew Siciliano, who joins us on the phone from the NFL Network and DirecTV's Red Zone. Hey, Andrew, how are you, man?
Good morning, guys. We could talk baseball, too. I went to game one of the ALCS in Cleveland Friday night.
Yeah, we don't have to, though.
Did you really? Okay. Hey, how long has it been? I was trying to remember, and I couldn't. I know the Indians haven't won a World Series in like 60 years, but how long has it been since they've been to a World Series?
1948, they won. 1954. They were there, and they actually set a modern record for wins in a season, and then were swept by Willie Mays and the Giants in four in 1954.
Oh, wow.
Boy, did Andrew have a lot of details at his fingertips.
Wait, there's been more.
Oh, we don't care, though, Andrew.
I care.
Wait a minute. 95 and 97, they were there.
All right.
Okay, good. Yeah, I was thinking in my lifetime they've been to the World Series, but they just haven't won it. So, well, congratulations.
They had a lead in game seven of the ninth inning and blew it.
That's what it's like being a Cleveland fan.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
All right, let's change gears. Before we get into some of the games from the weekend, I have to ask, because you did tweet about it, what was your Edgar Allan Poe joke that got you all the love? I didn't see it on the Red Zone, but apparently you made one that you're very proud of. Did it involve the Ravens, I'm guessing?
Oh, so the Chiefs have a 360-pound defensive tackle named Dontari Poe, and they threw him a bubble screen on, like, the two-yard line, meaning he lined up as a slot receiver to the right, and they did a quick snap, threw him the ball, and had guys blocking for him, and he scored.
That was awesome, and he did not need people blocking for him.
No, but he had to fight his way into the end zone because he almost didn't make it, and I said something about, like, don't question his telltale heart or something like that. I don't know. I mean, I could have done, like, Fall of the House of Usher or Cask of Amontillado, but no one would have gotten
it. What's happening right now?
I don't know.
Yeah. Andrew was trying to work in Edgar Allan Poe comedy.
Why?
I'm a Poe geek. This just in.
It was very impressive.
Something new about me.
All right. Yeah. Well, let's start with the Rams, Andrew. How much more does Case Keenum have to do to get a win?
Ah, man. See, here's the thing, and I don't want to call this worst case scenario, but I here's what the skeptics would tell you: that those who want to see Jared Goff, this was their worst nightmare yesterday because Case Keenum played lights out and they still lost.
Right.
And that's what's just so frustrating. And there are some questionable moments in that game, as there were last week against Buffalo. For example, why do you run the clock down to 3 seconds remaining in the second quarter and then go for it and then fail? And wow, those 3 points sure would have looked good at the end of the game. Now, you had a half to make up for that, and you still had a 10-point lead late, and you blew it. Case Keenum played lights out until he threw a pick at the end of the game into triple coverage. But he threw darts all over the field. I mean, comparatively speaking, darts out of Case Keenum's arm, and they marched up and down the field, and it wasn't enough. And this is a tough stretch. They, right after the game, they went right back to the airport in Detroit and flew directly to London. They are in London right now.
Wow.
And they are adjusting to the time zone and doing meetings early in the morning to try to adjust better. They got the New York Giants, who are a handful regardless of where they play, coming up this week.
What about the people that are calling for a new head coach? Time? Way
I don't
early?
Think it's going to happen. I don't. I just do not think it is going to happen. I think the bigger question is when or if this coach, who we like, I like Jeff Fisher personally, will get an extension because he's in the final year of his deal. And many thought the Rams would have announced an extension before the season began. They started well at 3-1. Now they're 3-3. They get London with the Giants. They get a bye week, and then they get the Carolina Panthers, who are far better than their 1-5 record back here at the Coliseum in 2 weeks.
Every year, Chip can look forward to her woeful Miami Dolphins winning one game against a good team.
Yeah.
And this was it yesterday, right, against the Steelers. And they had going for him that Ben Roethlisberger apparently is hurting quite badly, it looks like.
Yeah, so he has a meniscus thing. He's going to get it cleaned up today. They don't think it's that bad of a surgery. They get the Patriots alley this week, so congratulations for beating Landry Jones in advance.
Feels good.
And then they have a bye, so he's probably, they think, back after the bye. I'll be honest, there's a couple of games every year where you go, I did not see that one coming.
Right.
Sorry, Chip. That was one of those games. I mean, the Dolphins' new coach, Adam Gase, just started cutting guys this week. He cut two offensive linemen that had started last week on a Tuesday. He cut another running back off the bench. He got another offensive lineman off the practice squad. He just started saying, you're fired. Get out.
Wow.
You suck. Out. You out. And then they beat the Steelers. I can't figure it out. I can't figure out 200 yards rushing from a running back that was benched in September either, but somehow they won, which means, of course, whatever they do this week, which I haven't looked at in advance, they will fall flat on.
Well, there are the Dolphins. Enjoy this week while you have it, Chip. We're talking to our friend Andrew Siciliano from the NFL Network. I'm sure this is a question that's going to be asked a lot on your network today, and that is, what's wrong with Aaron Rodgers?
I have no idea.
Threw one of the worst interceptions of his life yesterday. He lost a fumble. He missed some easy TD passes. This is not the future Hall of Famer that we're used to watching every week.
No. The fumble is somewhat explainable. I mean, he would say it's inexcusable, but when you have 300-pound people chasing you, trying to hurt you, sometimes they take the ball from you. But some of the interceptions, look, all last year we blamed, we meaning the collective intelligence of the media, blamed lack of Jordy Nelson, he was injured, lack of chemistry with the receivers replacing Jordy Nelson, so on, blah, 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 blah. Devontae Adams is all Devontae Adams' fault. Clearly, there's something wrong. He had not thrown a touchdown pass in the fourth quarter all season until that little one to Randall Cobb near the end of the game when the game was already decided. Mm-hmm. So I don't get it. I don't figure it out. I also think the Cowboys deserve a heck of a lot of credit because nobody saw 5-1 coming. And
I'll tell you,
we were joking yesterday that we saw the official demise in one game of Aaron Rodgers and Tony Romo. That's a little bit dramatic. Aaron Rodgers will be just fine. But I don't think Tony Romo is getting his job back. And I've been the one saying there's no way that you keep him on the bench. They are 5-1. Dak Prescott's pretty amazing.
Yeah, he looks great.
You have Troy Aikman and Brett Favre in the booth together, two Hall of Famers in the fourth quarter yesterday, both going, yeah, I don't know how Tony Romo plays again.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. I mean, it's a best-case scenario, though, for the Cowboys to make a transition this seamlessly from the past to the future, right?
It's a great problem to have.
Exactly.
Multiple Pro Bowler on the bench who's ready to come in if the other guy gets hurt. I mean, most people would kill to have that problem.
Absolutely.
So they're sitting pretty. And other sports cliches we could use to describe their situation.
All right, Andrew, up next, at the risk of upsetting Dave Sanchez, talking about his Atlanta Falcons again, we all hate it when officiating has any impact on the final score of the game.
But you loved it yesterday.
Well, no, I didn't. I was very – look, you never want to win like that. You never want to win on
I do. I'd take that win.
Oh, I'm not saying I'm giving it back.
Okay,
I'm just saying it was so obvious to everyone after the call, but referees are just humans, that it was pass interference, and that made all the difference in that game because clearly they were close enough to, you know, and had time enough to kick a field goal and win that game. How do you come back from something like that? I mean, you can be as mad as Dan Quinn was on the sidelines, but it doesn't change anything. I guess you just have to put it behind you and forget about it, right?
Dan Quinn got pretty fired up. That was funny.
He sure did.
Green suit as well. That was funny. Yeah, I think they got the short end of that call, clearly. So it was Julio Jones, it was fourth down, end of the game. Granted, if he caught the ball, it's not as if they won the game. They still have a long ways to go. But Julio Jones, middle of the field, Richard Sherman seemingly interfered with him. It should have been a call. And Dan Quinn, the coach of the Falcons, went nuts. I would say, and this is no solace, they were playing with house money. They beat Carolina.
They beat Denver in Denver. They stayed out west and then were in position to do this to the Seahawks yesterday. That would have been a ridiculous three-game run where the late Danny Green would have yelled, crown their behinds. But it didn't happen. They're still a class of that division. I don't think they're going to have a second half of the season collapse like they did last year. I think they're going to run away with the division, and chances are they'll get the Seahawks again. But, yeah, that should have been passing.
That's a pretty impressive offense they've got.
Is Richard Sherman, in fact, crazy?
No. If he is, he's crazy like a fox.
Okay. Like, Kevin, you're referring to the meltdown that he had earlier in the game where he had to be separated from his own teammates?
He had crazy eyes.
I
was like, that guy's possessed by Satan right now.
Richard Sherman, good dude, bright dude, thoughtful dude. There are, if you want
possessed
to go down
by Satan.
Crazy, however.
Yes.
We could go down the list of crazy. He's not on it.
All right. He was pretty disappointed in the way the defense was playing, though, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, there's the Levine toilet, one of the touchdowns. They had just been beaten. Honestly, all the touchdowns kind of melt into one yesterday.
Right.
They had just been beaten, and he was going after, was it Easley? I don't remember. Then Cam Chancellor was in the middle of it, and he wasn't even
playing. He's not even playing, right. Yeah, right. It was pretty hilarious.
The Seahawks were banged up defensively yesterday, so what the Falcons did was against a diminished defense, but regardless, going in there on the road and getting that close, coulda, woulda, shoulda, but Falcons are good. I am officially Dave, not the Dave Cares, buying the Falcons this year, and that endorsement gets them nothing.
All right.
All right. All right.
Jets and Cardinals tonight. Andrew Siciliano will be all over the TV on Up to the Minute on the NFL Network at 1, and then, of course, every Sunday on the Red Zone channel on DirecTV. Hey, you look good in the glasses, too, Andrew. I wanted to mention that.
I don't know if they're
fake or not, or you're just trying to look smart or what the deal is.
He's going for the library look.
Looks good on you, Andrew.
You guys are great.
I love it when you take your hair out of the bun and then you shake your head.
Right.
That's my favorite,
right.
Andrew.
With the white button down.
Yeah.
That's right. You're a sex pot. Sexy Andrew is the best, Andrew. Have a great week, man. We'll talk to you next time. Kevin, I'll spare you the Halloween spooks this time.
Thank you.
This is the most wonderful time of the year, particularly for horror movie fans, because it's time for the Screamfest Horror Film Festival, the largest and longest-running horror film festival in the U.S. Some have called it the Sundance of Horror. It starts tomorrow night and runs for about 9 days or so at the DCL Chinese Theater in Hollywood. This year's ambassador is in studio with us right now. Actress Lydia Hirst joins us on the Kevin Bean Show. Hey, Lydia!
Hello.
What's going on?
Oh, gosh. Well, as you said, I'm here today as ambassador of Screamfest. I'm really excited for the festival. It starts tomorrow night, and I think it's going to be amazing.
I think it's going to be amazing, too, and I can't wait to talk about some of these films. Let's talk about you for a minute. You have grown up, since you were a little kid, watching and loving scary movies, right?
Yes.
Like, this is you're the perfect person to be an ambassador for this festival.
Yeah, probably. I don't know what it is about horror. I think it's this idea that horror is constantly pushing the boundaries, and it doesn't necessarily have to have that sort of Hollywood happy ending. Anything goes in horror.
And I heard it takes a lot to scare you, and very rarely do you get scared at a movie. While
That's
I'm
true.
Covering my eyes and I'm screaming, you're just like, oh, whatever.
Occasionally there will be something that I'll have to put the popcorn aside for a moment.
Allie's marine crawling out of the theater.
Sure.
I read your interview with the LA Weekly, Lydia, and you said that you saw The Exorcist when you were in first grade.
Something like that, yeah, around first or second grade.
That doesn't seem like good parenting, right?
Well, I kind of grew up on and off the sets of John Waters films because my mother was doing those movies.
See,
so I kind of had a
parenting.
Different take on entertainment itself where, you know, I saw everybody on screen and off screen and the makeup effects, so everything that went into it. So I think when I was so little, I didn't really understand the story that was happening, and I was just like, oh, young girl in makeup. And I don't really get it. But,
so in other words, like most little kids would be confused because they would think it was real because you'd been to the sets and seen the makeup
right.
and the rehearsals.
Right, so I understood
you knew that
it wasn't real and that there was this whole other layer to it. And so I was just kind of looking at the, you know, the little girl, that's so cool, she's doing this. And that must have been so fun. And whoa.
While I'm freaking out that the kid is possessed by Satan.
Right.
Right.
Oh, my gosh.
Are there tons, this may sound like a dumb question, but are there tons of horror movies being made that if it weren't for things like the Screamfest Horror Film Festival would not get seen and bought?
Yes, definitely.
Is that kind of the point of this thing?
That is definitely the point, because this gives sort of young filmmakers the opportunity to get their films out there, to get them seen, to get them in front of audiences, and it's really, it's remarkable. We have a lot of new directors. We actually have a couple directors that are children of famous actors. Sean Brosnan, whose son of Pierce Brosnan, has a film this year that's actually going to be closing the festival. And then I believe Mel Gibson's son has a
Louis.
Film in the festival as well. Yes.
Be new, Louis.
Wow.
Just putting that out. Just putting that out there.
Have you seen any of these movies yet this year, Lydia?
I have not. So I'm very nervous and excited. I will be introducing a lot of the films as well as moderating the question and answer afterwards. But I'm going to be there with the audience sort of taking in the films.
Is there a question and answer after every one or just certain ones?
I believe it's after every one. I'm only moderating, I guess, about six of them.
Okay, so it starts tomorrow night. It goes through the 27th at the TCL Chinese Theater in Hollywood. Is it just one movie a night?
Ooh.
Or multiple?
It's multiple.
Okay. ScreamFestLA.com is the website. All screenings are open to the public, which is important to mention because a lot of times these film festivals, you know, you go to Sundance or something like that, you can't just show up and get into every
right.
Get into the movies. But this one, they're all open to the public, right?
It's not, right, which not is really amazing. So if you're a fan of horror, you are welcome to come out. You can sit there. You can meet some of the cast who's going to be in attendance for the film. We're going to be taking photos. And it's just, it's a really happy, warm environment, which sounds kind of strange considering it's about horror, but it's really nice that we have true fans that are showing up and want to be there and want to see the films.
What's your favorite horror movie that you've been in, Lydia?
Oh, that's a good
question.
You've
got quite a few of them, right?
I do. Gosh, I think one, I mean, it's interesting because I tend to gravitate more towards the grotesque characters that are very different from how I am sort of in my everyday life. There was a film that I did that was in last year's Scream Fest called Condemned, and every day on set, I sort of got covered in track marks and bruises, and I had rotten nicotine painted onto my teeth, and it was just very over the top and gory and nasty. I mean, I looked like I smelled bad.
All right. But one time you shot late and you just said, you know what, just leave it on.
Yep.
I'm only going to get 4 hours of sleep, right? Just leave it like it is. I don't want to start from scratch.
That's crazy. All right, ScreamFestLA.com. Hey, before we let you go, this thing that you were doing over the weekend at Not Scary Farm, unrelated to this, that was just you wanting to get some more horror on?
Well, it was a little bit of both. You know, Funny or Die sort of came to me with this idea of wanting to go to the park because they knew I was such a huge fan of horror, and the timing kind of worked out perfectly. And so this director, Zach, and I got to go and get dressed up sort of like zombie ghouls and go out and actually scare people.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
It was pretty cool, although really hard because people are not afraid, and it takes a lot of effort to get them to jump, and I think my voice is still a little bit scratchy from trying to make zombie noises.
I think I would be so afraid, and I bet this happens to the people who work that Not Scary Farm, that you jump up at somebody or come up behind somebody and then their impulse is just to reach out and hit you.
I wondered that too.
There's the reflex action when something comes up behind you. That's what you want to do. So, but you were okay. You were
I
cool.
was okay. Yes. Yes. That's I mean, I did have a couple, you know, professionals that worked the park there with me too to sort of help me try to scare people.
That's when my ninja training comes out. And you go right down.
Wow. I did not see that coming. See,
you can't
I'm the
stop
opposite.
Yourself, Kevin.
I think I've mentioned this before. When I would play hide and seek as a kid and I'd get super nervous, I'd have to pee immediately.
Oh, no.
So I would be horrible doing this job. I'd be on a bathroom break like every 5 minutes.
Or you'd just pee your pants.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Well, yeah, all right, let me give out the details again. ScreamFest Horror Film Festival starts tomorrow night, goes through the 27th at the TCL Chinese Theater in Hollywood. Looks like a lot of really good movies, including Abigail Breslin is in a movie, Adrian Grenier, Johnny Galecki, lots of people doing movies that if you love horror, you don't want to miss this. Go to ScreamFestLA.com to get your tickets. And again, all screenings are open to the public. Lydia, so nice to have you come in. Thanks so
Thank
much for the
so much for having me.
You bet.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. This is the Kevin and Bean Show at 7:54.
Interview and performance with the 1975. That's coming up right after the top of the hour. They just played the Forum, sold-out show at the Forum on Friday night. And we're lucky enough to have them in studio here at K-Rock this morning. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Rob is here now. Time for the Showbiz Beat on a Monday. What's going on?
Because it's a Monday, we take a look at the top 10 movies at the box office. The Accountant came in at number one this weekend with about $25 million. Ben Affleck as a dude with Asperger's who kills people.
And then
moved to New Orleans after leaving the bodies behind in
That's
Seattle.
That's exactly what I thought.
He is buried in a shallow grave behind his farmhouse that has a giant pink clown.
He has
on
to
it.
Move around a lot so he doesn't
exactly,
get caught.
Right?
Interesting.
Has anyone ever heard from Bean's wife and like recently? Like,
well, she has that fake Instagram account.
Well, yeah, but that we know that's fake. But I'm talking about actual content.
I don't think so.
No,
not that I'm aware of.
Kevin Hart's comedy concert film What Now debuted with $12 million. That was number two at the box office. The Girl on the Train, Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, and Deepwater Horizon were the top five films. Then Storks, Magnificent Seven, Middle School, Sully, and Birth of a Nation rounded out your top 10 movies at the box office. I don't know if you caught Saturday Night Live this weekend. Very entertaining. This Alec Baldwin as Trump casting is just a masterpiece of bringing him in. They had an opening segment, which was very funny. They did the spoof of the second, and as they called it, welcome to the second and worst ever presidential debate. The lovely and talented Kate McKinnon as Hillary and Alec Baldwin as Donald Trump. It was a very funny segment. They did a thing where Trump was stalking Hillary behind her, but they played the Jaws theme music, so it was like a shark. Bum, 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 and he would just like cruise by behind her in the shot. It was very funny. Here's a segment here that they talk about Donald Trump bringing the four mistresses of Bill Clinton to the event who were sitting in the audience. And he was complaining that Hillary Clinton was trying to silence these victims of sexual abuse.
Martha, she is trying to silence these women, but they need to be respected. They need their voices heard.
What about all the women accusing you of sexual assault?
They need to shut the hell up.
So naturally, Donald Trump couldn't let that just be.
Of course not.
He had to take to Twitter and take on Saturday Night Live. Here was his tweet. Watch Saturday Night Live. Hit job on me. Time to retire the boring and unfunny show. Now it's boring and unfunny.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah.
But didn't he host it a couple
season?
Years?
Yeah. Yeah. Alec Baldwin betrayal stinks. Media rigging election! Exclamation point.
Well, that's so, a weird ending.
No, Saturday Night Live is rigging the election, apparently. So
who knew they had that power?
Huh.
He's such a whiny little bitch.
He really is.
How many people have they taken on throughout the history of that show? Politicians.
Oh.
I mean, George W. Bush. I mean, you name it.
Oh,
Barack
Sarah
Obama.
Palin.
They've done them all.
Sarah Palin. I don't remember anyone ever saying, boo-hoo, they're picking on me.
Yeah.
I don't remember anyone.
Yeah, almost all of them are just completely quiet about
it. Sarah Palin came on the show.
Yeah, true.
Right.
And, like, you know, helped. Well, whatever you're going to do. Whatever you're going
to
do.
He has a little bit of a thin skin for a guy who wants to run the world.
Or.
Wrong.
Or he's a whiny little bitch.
Or both.
Or both. Allison Janney is getting her star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame today. If you're a fan of her show, Mom, or of any of their other work, like West Wing, Masters of Sex, maybe you want to go down and say hi. It's happening at the 6100 block of Hollywood Boulevard across from the newly developed Easttown. So if you want to see Allison Janney get her star, you can do that today at 11:30 a.m. Just a little heads up. Shia LaBeouf. Hollywood cannibal, Shia LaBeouf. It's not official whether he's actually married to Mia Goth or not, but apparently they are still pretending like they are. They were at a dog park over the weekend, and they both had wedding bands on that finger, so no word whether they actually got the license that made it official or not, but they are sure acting like they're a married couple, and they seem very much, very much in love. Until he eats her. Right? Because he's a cannibal!
Actual cannibal Shia LaBeouf.
Right. Actually a cannibal.
Science.
Today's celebrity birthdays. Comedian Norm Macdonald's 57 years old today. Director Mike Judge turns 54. Wyclef Jean, 47 years old. Ziggy Marley is 48. Eminem is 44. From the UFC, Holly Holm turns 35 and Luke Rockhold is 32. And actress Felicity Jones celebrates her 33rd birthday. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
We've been doing this job for a long time, and if there's one thing I've learned, Kevin, back me up if I'm wrong about this, is that bands love to be up and playing at 8 a.m. I mean, they live for it. It's their favorite. Am I right, Matt, from the 1975?
Yeah, it's not ideal.
Really? 8 a.m. does not mesh with your lifestyle?
Well, we were up at 6:30, so that was heavy. We don't do that very often.
Well, yeah. We apologize for that. Okay. Thank you so much for coming in with your band, the 1975. How are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Well, we're doing great. We've been looking forward to this for a long time. We last spoke with you. Kevin and I got a chance to talk to you guys at Acoustic Christmas last year at the
Forum. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, I remember. Yeah,
and it was super, super fun. And it's just, I feel like it's been a rocket ride for you guys since then. I mean, have you had a day off since we saw you at Christmas?
Not really. I mean, we were lucky enough. I think we were like one of the opening bands of at that Forum show, and we met you, and we got to play the Forum the other night by ourselves, which was amazing. But yeah, we've not really stopped since then, and we don't really stop for a while.
Most bands' progress is not quite that quick. You like sort of played at the beginning of our show at the Forum, and Friday night you were by yourselves. You're the headliners. That's
yeah,
crazy.
Yeah. It's been amazing for us. I think this record's really kind of resonated with people, and it's kind of extended the kind of hardcore fan base that we already did have. So it just felt like we've kind of capitalized on all the opportunities that we've had. So it's been amazing, really.
Yep. I mean, yeah. I mean, the key to it is you guys never disappoint. When people go see you in concert, they know they're going to get a great time. And then when you do put out a new record, it's great. I mean, there's been no missteps.
Yeah, and yeah. It's been good.
Is that pressure? Is that pressure filled for you to have everything go so great, or are you just so confident in your abilities that you would accept and expect nothing less?
No. I think that we. I don't know. We just, you know, we've been doing it since we were 13, like the same lineup. So I think that there's like a purity to it. And whether that's something that translates, you know, I can't really be objective about that. But I think that we do it for the right reasons. And I think most stuff, you know, whether it's in art or in any context like that, you know, people kind of just believe in stuff that's believable, you know?
Mm-hmm. I'm always curious about bands that conquer America. How much of that is in your mind? Back in England, at what point in the 1975's career did you guys start thinking about, hey, we're going to make it in America too?
Oh, well, it was quite early on. I mean, because of the internet, really. It kind of changed things in the past 10, 15 years. Like, you used to have to – I mean, we still do it the old school way, you know. Like, this tour, we're playing everywhere, and tours before, we've done the whole of America. So we've toured it properly. But the internet kind of allows you to have this kind of – you know, audience that isn't limited to geography. So
the days when you used to think, oh, we're going to conquer England, but then we're going to have to go conquer a whole other place separately at a separate time.
It doesn't really work like that. I mean, you know, we just went and played to 12,000 people in Mexico City, and that's a country that we've never even been to. So, I mean, that's testament, obviously, to the internet. And I think, like I said, we're quite geographically ambiguous as well. We're quite, like, you know, sexually ambiguous, racially ambiguous. We don't speak of one particular place or anything. It's more of a kind of a middle class millennial boredom that we kind of speak of.
Is that by design?
I think it's just through no choice. You know, we're not we're not like the Arctic Monkeys. So we don't have the whole, you know, Sheffield kind of, you know, we're not. I don't know what it is. I just think that we're not like a bands like, for example, like Oasis or the Smiths. Like where they come from is a massive part of their identity, like,
right,
culturally. Mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily been the case with the 1975. It's been a more geographically ambiguous thing. So we've been embraced all around the world.
You have, and musically too, and I think that's one of the – I know it's one of the things that you guys are proudest of, is that you can do 10 songs in a row and none of them sound like one another, but that also enables – there are a lot of entry points for you. If somebody loves EDM, or they love punk, or they love hard rock, or they love dance music, or they love whatever, alternative music, you guys can be there for them too, and you must love that fluidity.
I think that we just – like I said, you know, if we're going to do it, we want to kind of be like ambassadors for our generation, which is that kind of millennial generation with no attention span and no tribalism towards kind of cultural things. So, you know, it's very seldom do you find somebody, you know, younger than me who's into one type of music, because we've kind of been conditioned with this non-linear consumption of music.
Yeah, it's very different.
Yeah, to kind of consume everything.
You guys grew up with YouTube being your radio station and iPod or then iPhone on Shuffle being your playlist.
I mean, nearly. We're a bit older, like, because, I mean, I suppose our fans definitely, people who have found us have definitely found us through there. We just kind of, yeah, like, we had the internet early on. And it really informed the way that we make music, therefore the way that people kind of consume our music. So it is very, it's quite polarizing, but it's at the same time, it's representative of the way that people are.
This,
I think.
This might sound odd, but I was a huge John Hughes fan growing up. Your music to me sounds like what his soundtracks would be now.
Yeah, that's kind of the point. I think that's one stylistic thing that is purposeful. I mean, I grew up, you know, being obsessed with John Hughes and obsessed with all of those movies. I think you can hear it quite obviously in the records. Songs like Love Me sounds like Weird Science, and then, you know, you've got Change of Heart, which has a kind of, I suppose, a Simple Minds element to it. I just think that there's an idealism to those films, the kind of sense of, you know, your teenage years being this kind of apocalyptic time where, you know, the future and the past doesn't really matter. It's just all about the present. And I like that kind of celebration of that time of your life.
So when I listen to your music and I stare out the window and pretend I'm in a movie, that's what you were going for?
Totally. Well, that's that's all I do, really.
Yeah.
That's the voice of Matt Healy, by the way, from the 1975. The band's going to be performing live down the hall in the Red Bull Sound Space here at K-Rock in just a few minutes. Do you worry or do you think at all about how you will age and how that's going to affect the exact thing that you're so successful at now, which is connecting with those people?
Well, I think our audience will grow with us and already have done, you know. I think that it's already very different, you know. Like, if you look at the first album and the second album, I mean, you might not be that familiar with it, but I think that there's songs on the first album that simply wouldn't have been written on the second album. We've got songs like Sex that I wrote when I was 18, you know. That's 10 years ago nearly. So things just kind of changed naturally, but we've matured and we've kind of grown up as songwriters, and you know, that's all we really, really care about, is making music that makes us feel really, really good. So if we keep doing that, then...
Songwriting is fascinating to me because you're able to come up with something out of nothing. And I found your process interesting, where you start with music and you're singing nonsense, and then you sort of just morph into words.
It can happen one way. I can either have a very, very clear narrative idea of something that I want to do. For example, the song... We've got a song called The Ballad of Me in My Brain, and that song is about me physically looking for my brain as if I'd misplaced it. When you have ideas like that, that's really easy, because that was like Dr. Seuss kind of write. It was really easy to write like that. It's when you're writing about broader things that I find quite difficult, that then I tend to appropriate kind of sounds and think, well, what does that vowel sound sound like? It's quite a complex and lengthy process for us, the writing process.
Matt, when a band is as popular as yours is and so many people fall in love with the songs, does it end in – are there any odd fan encounters as a result of that, or people who misinterpret your lyrics, or people who expect something from you you're so a big part of their lives?
I think so. I mean, there's an element of – you know, you don't take – after a while, you don't take a kind of personal responsibility, you know, because I think that there is a lot of people who – have quite an intense relationship with your music. So then when they meet you in that moment, they want to have quite an intense interaction with you. And when you're actually a normal human being, you're not really prepared for that a lot of the time. So I feel a responsibility artistically to not inform or educate, but to be honest and be truthful and talk about the things that matter. I don't take on that much of a personal responsibility, because that would be a bit intense. I can't deal with every mental person that loves my band. Do you know what I mean?
You may not be qualified for that.
Yeah, exactly. You should seek professional advice.
I heard you talking about sitting on a bench with somebody who was talking about committing suicide, and you were like, look, I write music.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Maybe you need to be talking to somebody else.
Exactly, yeah. I'm not your guy. I'm kind of close to where you're at. So that's just...
Before we send you down the hall to play, tell me about playing the Forum show on Friday night. What was it like for you?
Oh, I don't know, man. You know, I'd love to be like, you know, everyone wants to be like, oh yeah, it was amazing and it was ideal and it was like everything I dreamed of. You know, those moments are always appreciated retrospectively, because, you know, you're doing it. I think one of the things that I've realized that I actually do, that I actually enjoy doing, is dreaming. Because I used to sit in my bedroom and dream about stuff like playing the this or playing the that or putting that record out. And it's actually the dreaming of it that I covet more than the things themselves.
So now that you're doing the things that you used to dream about.
Yeah, and that's not to be like, oh, you know, grass is always greener. But I think you have an idealistic sense of what those things are going to be. And they simply aren't, because you're there. And I hate me. I wish I wasn't there, but I am there. And I have to be the one who deals with it. So it was, retrospectively, it was amazing seeing people enjoy such a different set and stuff. It was amazing. That was all amazing. But, you know, it was me on stage, so.
And strange to say, you can enjoy it more in your dream.
Oh, totally. You can't enjoy it. I can't enjoy most things in real life. I enjoy most things retrospectively.
It's like looking at me, but a young man.
Got very dark in here. Oh. Well, you just have to start dreaming bigger, I guess, Matt. I guess it's the 1975 in space
Yeah, exactly. You know? I mean, listen, it sounds like, you know, I'm being poor me. I'm just trying to be, like, totally honest. Like, you know, those things, you try and play the forum. Do you know what I mean? It's scary.
No, thank you.
Yeah, no.
No. We'll let you, let the professionals handle it.
We don't want to have anything to do with that. All right. What are we going to be hearing on the other side of this quick break here, Matt? It's you and Adam, your guitar player as well?
Yeah, me and Adam are going to play
little stripped down
music? Yeah, kind of. We're going to do Change of Heart and Somebody Else. We're gonna do two songs off the new record. Two of our
that's fantastic.
Ones.
The 1975, you guys. If you're already too late, if you're not on board with how great all of their records are, the EPs and the albums as well, and great live performers too. And we'll get a little taste of that when we come back with the Red Bull Sound Space at K Rock. The band is here, and we'll return right after this on K Rock.
It is the Red Bull Sound Space. The 1975 is here to play live. The album is I Like It When You Sleep. ... And you guys are going to play what song first?
Change of Heart.
1975 on K-Rock.
I never found love in the city. I just sat in self-pity and cried in the car. A sad change of heart. You said I've been so worried by you lately. You were fit, but you're losing it. You played a part, this is how it starts. Oh, I just had a change of heart. I just had a change of heart.
How about that?
There you go.
That sounds fantastic.
Thank you. That is Matt and Adam, half of the 1975, performing live at the Red Bull Sound Space here at K-Rock. By the way, I want to say hi to our Facebook Live viewers from all over the country, including Texas and Colorado and Maine and all over the world. We're hearing from people in Newcastle, Australia, Hong Kong, Italy, Puerto Rico, Los Cabos, Mexico. A lot of people tuning in from all over the world to see the band perform. What's next, you guys?
Somebody else.
Somebody else.
Somebody else, once I get it right. Okay.
So I heard you found somebody else. And first thought it was a lie. I took over things that made sounds. The rest I can do without. Somebody, I ain't thinking about you as somebody else. Somebody else. I'm looking through your mind, looking through your phone.
How great was that?
That sounded fantastic. I'm the only one applauding, but I really enjoyed it. I'm applauding for the whole world. Thanks, you guys. That was really fun.
Thanks very much for having us.
And we really appreciate you coming by. It's always great to have you in the K-Rock universe. Thank you so much.
Thanks for stopping by.
Take a quick break. We'll talk all things Dodgers with our friend Matt Money Smith coming up right after this on K-Rock.
Dodgers!
Right?
Dodgers!
That is actually correct, sir. Our friend Matt Money Smith, co-host of the Petros and Money radio show on AM 570, the Dodger station in town, joins us back on the phone. Matt, I'm so happy that we're having this conversation at 1-1 rather than what could have been a disaster in Chicago. How you doing, buddy?
I'm well. I think the Dodgers would probably say they feel like they missed out by having this conversation at 1-1 because they felt like once they got through Aroldis Chapman in game one that was theirs. And, you know, that they scored in the top of the ninth. I think they felt like, believe it or not, even though they lost 8-5, that they let one slip away there.
Yeah. I know you're going to be talking about it a lot on your radio show today, but walk people through that. You know, we've talked a lot about how Dave Roberts certainly needs to be in contention for manager of the year in baseball this year. But that eighth inning, a lot of people are questioning his decision to double walk those guys. What went down there, Matt?
Oh, man, I could not disagree more. First, he's going to be the manager of the year. I don't think there's any question about that. What he was doing was getting Aroldis Chapman, for those that don't know, a closer who throws 103 miles an hour, out of the game. So even though you have a hitter who is not hitting for the Cubs and Jason Hayward, and really a lineup that's not hitting from the best offense in all of baseball over the course of the season, what he did was walk two players to get the pitcher's spot up in the order with two outs, forcing Joe Maddon to pull his closer out of the game. And remember, they gave up a bounty at the trade deadline to get Aroldis Chapman because they knew it was their only weakness. They didn't quite have that shutdown pitcher in the bullpen. So by getting the one guy they felt good about out of the game, they felt like, and look, Dave was right. They scored a run in the top of the ninth, and then they could get to their closer and close that thing out and win the game by a single run, 5-4. The only problem was Joe Blanton hung a pitch. I mean, it's that simple. The bases were loaded. He's 0-2 on Miguel Montero. He hangs a slider, and Montero crushes it for a grand slam. And I know Twitter explodes. What are you throwing that pitch on 0-2 for? Well, he's not throwing that pitch. He didn't mean to throw that pitch on 0-2. He missed his pitch, which is why it got crushed for a grand slam.
I feel like with professional pitchers, it just seems like everything they do is on purpose, and they don't make mistakes for the most part.
For the most part, but they make a lot of mistakes. As, like I said, the aforementioned Aroldis Chapman. You know, I mean, he made a mistake at 103 miles an hour in Adrian Gonzalez, and it's bad. Like, you know, I know people think baseball is boring and it's long, and I'm talking to you, Kevin.
Oh, it is both.
In those particular moments, high pressure, high leverage, postseason situations, when you hear Adrian Gonzalez in the post game talk about how he approached, you know, his style of swinging against a guy who's throwing 103 miles an hour, and he details, well, you know, you got to soften your hands. You just got to accept that it's going to go the other way and use his velocity to create your velocity. It is fascinating, you know, that this particular form of athletics can be so scientific in that one-on-one battle in that moment.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of things going on in all the players' minds that we as fans have no idea how much goes into making that game unfold the way it does. I think you're right.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why, you know, people have such reverence for the National League versus the American League. Because, you know, if you're in the AL and you're Dave Roberts, you're not walking those guys because there is no pitcher spot. Aroldis Chapman's in the game, and he's in the game for as long as the manager wants him because in the American League there's a designated hitter. The pitcher doesn't hit, and it changes everything. I mean, it completely changes the way the game is played.
What about when you've got a guy like Clayton Kershaw who not only pitches lights out again yesterday but also gets himself a hit?
Yeah, I mean, that's what you said. It's how excited are Dodger fans that they're coming back 1-1 instead of down 0-2? Well, what it means is that you're guaranteed to get another Kershaw start. And considering they're 3-0 in the postseason now when he starts a game, that's what you want in that game five. He'll pitch on short rest. He'll throw on 3 days rest on Thursday at Dodger Stadium. And then on 2.5 days rest, I wouldn't be surprised, or 2 days rest, I should say, I wouldn't be surprised to see him throw in game seven if that's what it comes down to. So that's why winning that game yesterday for Kershaw was so big, because you can see how dominant he is when he's got it going. And that is not someone the Cubs are looking forward to seeing two more times. So, you know, if you want to just string it out to the very end, if you can get a Rich Hill win, or a Julio Urias win, now you're looking at two starts likely from Clayton Kershaw to try to advance to the World Series.
What about Kenley?
About Kenley, yeah. For people that, I guess, don't really know, you know, the way that the game has changed and how specialized it is, closers are just meant to get three outs. You know, get the last three outs, and that's what they practice for. That's how they, you know, in their off days, that's what they're training their arm for, their endurance for. You know, maybe they're throwing harder than most other pitchers because they know they don't have to throw, but maybe 25 pitches if things go really bad. So when you're talking about someone that's been doing that for the last half decade, and now he's being asked to double his workload, go to the bench and rest, and then come back into the game, which is, like, these are creatures of habit. They want to be on schedule, and that completely takes you out of your comfort zone. You know, when you are called out of the bullpen, and now you have to go back to the bench and hang out in the dugout where you're almost never.
Right.
Over the course of a regular season, remember, relief pitchers hang out in the bullpen. They don't even hang out in the dugout. So it's
right.
Like, oh, wow.
I don't think he's getting enough love.
Here and this is great in here. I mean, that's kind of what Kenley's dealing with now.
Yeah, that, I mean, the six outs that he got yesterday obviously were essential because that thin one-run lead is not going to hold up itself. I mean, you need a dominant guy out there on the mound. So it was just amazing. It's been so much fun this series. And I think I forgot to ask you this last week when we were talking round one before it got to the Cubs. Do you have any kind of conflicted feelings? Does 8-year-old Matt Money Smith have trouble rooting against the Cubs, man?
I know. It's odd, and I told people, you know, that you, it's something I always mention is, you know, your emotions tell you, you know, what your rooting interests are, and I really do not care, and I kind of found that out last year when the Dodgers and Cubs were set to meet, and then the Dodgers, unfortunately lost to the Mets in five games. I just didn't care. I had no connection to that Cubs team that got swept.
Isn't that something?
It didn't upset me in the least. Yeah, but, you know, it's like I told people, I've been here for 25 years.
Right.
And, you know, since we're the Dodger station, my kids are going to games. The players are super great with them and hang out with them. And you know, when you've got your kids screaming and yelling about Justin Turner and Corey Seager and how much they like them, it's pretty easy to get on that train.
The Cubs fans have no room this year. I know it's been 108 years since they won that last World Series, but they have no room to complain about a curse or anything like that because they have a very, very good team and have had all season long. So if anything screws up now, it's just baseball being played like baseball is played, right?
Yeah, and that's, you know, kind of what the one concern is in the postseason is when you have a team that has been so dominant offensively. Now, listen, the Cubs have been dominant in every phase of the game, which is why it would be a big upset if they didn't make it. I mean, they're starting pitching. John Lackey is going to start game four for them. Their fourth starter would be the second best pitcher by far on the Dodgers roster, just in terms of some of the, you know, the advanced analytics. So when you think about that with pitching, they have the best defense in baseball. They have the best offense in baseball. So when that gets knocked out by a team, not that the Dodgers haven't been great. They've been the best second half team in baseball. But when it gets knocked out by a team, and I think you would describe the Dodgers as a team of grinders, it's pretty upsetting. And
yeah.
I think that's why the Cub fans would find it tough to swallow if the Dodgers defeated them. Because, again, in all three phases of the game, pitching, defense, hitting, they've been so dominant.
It feels like it's finally their year. All right, so no game today. So you guys are regular time, 3 to 7 on AM 570. And then tomorrow I assume you'll be out broadcasting at the stadium like you do?
Yep, we'll be out at Dodger Stadium. If you're going, come see us right behind the Dodger bullpen in left field. We'll be broadcasting 1-4, and then first pitch, like it is every game in the NLCS, just after 5 o'clock. It'll be Rich Hill tomorrow, and then likely Julio Urias, followed by Clayton Kershaw would be my guess.
Sounds great. Very exciting, Matt. As always, we appreciate the time, sir. Thanks for jumping on.
All right, guys. Talk to you.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. This is the Kevin and Bean Show. It is 8:55.
The great senator from the state of New Hampshire, Jonah Ryan, joins us in studio to talk.
John very, H. Ryan.
Oh, that's right. It is John H. Ryan. I forgot to talk this very hectic political season. Or actor Timothy Simons from Veep is going to be in studio with us coming up right after the top of the hour. First, Ralph is here on a Monday with another look at the Showbiz Beat. What's going on?
It's going to be a very Veepy week. We've got Tim Simons on today, and then we've got David Mandel, showrunner and writer for Veep, tomorrow.
All right.
Celebrate Veep week.
Can't have too much Veep.
No, you can't. We gotta get that that lady in. That, who's the lady? The one who's the lady?
The president.
Yeah.
Selena Meyer.
Has she been in anything else?
I can't remember. I think she's new to a Hollywood scene.
I think she's got a good career ahead of her, though.
She's a talented lady. I think she could go places. If she plays her cards right. Movies, right?
Right.
Who doesn't love a movie? Every Monday morning, we take a look at the top 10 movies at the box office to see what people went to check out this weekend. The Accountant.
is number one with $25 million. Ben Affleck stars as a guy with Asperger's. He kills people.
Moves around frequently.
Moves from town to town because he has a lot to hide. Does a radio morning radio show, I believe. I haven't seen the film, but he's a morning radio show.
Was it Bean?
I'm not
as
sure.
As cover
that's
for his covert
accurate
operations where he launders money for bad people.
Bit on the nose.
Right?
Yeah.
Kevin Hart's comedy concert film, What Now?, debuted with $12 million, making it number two. The Girl on the Train, Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, Deepwater Horizon were your top five films. Storks, Magnificent Seven, Middle School, The Worst Years of My Life, Sully, and Birth of a Nation, rounding out the top ten. Last night, The Simpsons accomplished something very few television shows ever have. It was their 600th episode last night.
I'm number one. Victory is mine. So kiss my behind. Boom, chaka-laka-laka. In your face. Boo. Cha. Ka-cha-ka-cow. Ba. Boo. Ba. Who's your daddy? Ba-doo-ba-doo-ba-doo.
Simpsons, of course, has already been renewed. So, at sometime in season 29, in the year 2018, the 16th episode of season 29 airs. It'll have the record. It'll be the most episodic television show ever. But right now it's only number two behind.
Can you repeat the part of this stuff where you said all about the things?
Behind Gunsmoke. Gunsmoke's the number one show with 635 episodes of Marshall Matt Dillon protecting the good folks in Dodge City. You ever watch that? You ever watch Gunsmoke?
Nope.
You ever watch any Western, any TV Westerns?
No, sir.
Never a TV Western guy?
Nope.
Why?
It's old.
No. Not good enough reason.
Not good. Well, you see The Magnificent Seven a couple weeks ago,
yes,
in the theater.
It was good.
But that was not old. That was new. That was all based on an old. So I can watch that.
I don't like him because everyone's like dusty. It just seems ugh.
Everybody
just
needs a shower?
Yeah.
It was a dusty time.
I know. Gross.
You're gross.
You're disgusting.
You're the worst.
You're awful.
You belong in a casket.
Kids, you're both just awful.
It's hard to come back from that.
It really is.
That's what if a drop the mic moment right there.
What if we gave Marshall Dillon a Swiffer? There, would you be okay if he started just cleaning up after himself there,
yeah,
in Dodge City?
Sure.
Yeah.
I was talking to Allie earlier about why she hasn't watched Westworld yet, which is very critically acclaimed. People are loving. And I think we've just hit on it, is that it's set
it's
in old West times.
It's just,
yeah,
not dirt.
The virtual reality world is old Western, and she doesn't accept that.
Yeah. The other top five by the most watched series ever, Lassie, about that dog, was third.
Imagine how many episodes they do, Ralph.
591 episodes.
Wow.
Imagine being a writer on Lassie and having to come up with something to do again
this
week.
Dog finds a person in a hole. Oh, God, I don't know. I just don't care anymore. A lot of drunk guys worked on Lassie, I think.
I can't even imagine how many different plot points there could have been for Lassie.
Yeah. Let's take a look at today's celebrity birthdays. Luke Rockhold. You with me, fellas? 32 years old today.
One of the best names in mixed martial arts,
absolutely,
for sure.
Absolutely. UFC fighter Luke is 32 years old today. Holly Holm is 35, also from the UFC. Felicity Jones turns 33 years old today. Eminem turns 44. Ziggy Marley, 48 years old. Wyclef Jean, 47. Mike Judge, 54 years old today. And comedian Norm MacDonald. Norm! He's 57 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
It's that guy from that show that we love.
That was a full-blown Jonah Ryan moment. You're trying to put your headphones on there. Yeah, no,
it took 30 seconds. It looked like the beginning of 2001 where the monolith comes in.
Tim Simons, everybody.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me in.
How you been, man? How's your summer and early fall been? What have you been up to?
Well, we took the kids to a pumpkin farm yesterday. And like everything with children, it starts off great and you think this is going to be amazing. And by the end of it, you're like, I wish I never had one.
the meltdowns.
Now we have 13 pumpkins. It was hellishly stressful getting them, and I don't want children. That's sort of how that
Maybe it's a little too late for that last one.
So many pumpkins? I thought the whole point of going to the pumpkin patch is to pick the one special pumpkin that you're going to put out in your front porch or something.
But then, like, they get excited about, like, you know, I don't know. They got excited about gourds, I think. And then we also did some vegetable picking, and I feel like I don't live in Little House on the Prairie.
It does sound sort of like.
Is this Underwood Family Farms?
We went to Underwood Family Farms, yeah.
It's magic.
It was pretty magical. Until the very end.
Until the end in the car. And that's
a long drive.
I stopped
at one of those firehouse safe drops on the way home. I just left them.
What age is that good till, by the way? I don't know what the cutoff there. We got to figure that out.
I mean, technically, I feel like it's 18.
Good to know I got some wiggle room there.
Yeah. Okay,
yeah. I've been thinking about that myself.
Now, Tim, here's the thing that I'm confused by. Do you have actual time off? Because it seems like you have a bunch of movies either out or coming out. So I don't feel like there's been a lot of downtime for you. Has there?
It doesn't take that much time to get in a fight with your kids.
No. All the stuff that's coming out. So I'm in this movie, Christine, that came out in New York this past weekend and is opening up in Los Angeles, Boston, San Francisco, and Toronto, I believe, this coming Friday. And I'm in a movie called Gold that comes out on Christmas Day. But all this stuff was last summer. Like, I did all this stuff last summer.
So you're unemployable now. You were hot last year.
Toxic.
I mean, maybe not employed versus unemployable.
Well, you're employed because you guys are back shooting Veep again, right?
Yeah, we're back on set for Veep. Yeah.
And it's nice that you guys are shooting locally instead of working back east for a change.
So I can spend more time with my children.
In your pumpkin patch. Isn't it great when you work so hard to try to build those moments that you know are going to be amazing childhood memories, and invariably that's when you fall on your face and things just don't pan out.
My mom actually on this most recent family vacation just confessed to me that, like, all the family vacations we took when we were children,
right,
I have built my entire life around loving. She was like, oh, we were miserable.
Oh, that's so funny. The things you give up for your children.
I remember we drove across the country in a car, and I have two brothers, and the three of us were in the backseat, and we did nothing but fight the whole way. I don't know how my mom and dad didn't just pull over and just say, get out.
Yeah.
I don't know how they did it.
And
no idea.
I remember my dad taking us to Michigan. He drove it, like, to our childhood home in Michigan. We drove across the country from Maine to do that. And I remember, like, really, like, feeling connected with my brother and sister, even though all we did was punch each other. But, yeah, like, I don't know how they stood that. Because now knowing what it's like from the other side,
yeah.
I don't know.
It's a nightmare.
Because when you're a little kid, you think your parents are they're just magic. They have all the answers, and they know how to handle everything, and they're just smart. And now you realize they were just people like you are now.
Yeah, well, I'm magic and smart.
Sure.
You are magic and smart. Okay. Yeah. You have no answers. Timothy Simons is here. We got a lot of stuff we want to talk about, not the least of which is to try to pry some Veep secrets out of him. But let's do Christine first, just because you mentioned that it is going to be opening in a theater in L.A. this Friday. This is a movie that has been very critically acclaimed. What, it played to film festivals or something, right?
Yeah, it opened up at Sundance, yeah.
Now, do you drive the possessed car, or is the possessed car coming after you? I'm just confused.
That totally thing. Different. You know,
I'm actually really happy the name stuck. I feel like there is a thing, like, it's. I feel like there's a cutoff year in which you remember the Stephen King reference.
Right. Yeah, right.
I'm definitely me and Tracy Letts were like, this name's never going to stick. But then every young person was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Right. Now, Christine is based on a real life story of a real life newscaster in Florida who met a very tragic end. And I don't know how much we're allowed to say or you want to say about it, Tim, but it's a crazy thing that happened that I think probably a lot of people aren't familiar with.
Did you pick it because it's the same tone as Veep?
Yeah.
or the direct opposite?
The movie is about a reporter named Christine Chubbuck who committed suicide on air in the 1970s. For real, committed suicide on air. And that's sort of a well-known story, or at least even if you don't know her specific story, it's one of those ones that I feel like has turned into almost like an urban legend, that it's sort of like the same story has popped up in every other city. People just kind of generally know about it. But one of the amazing things about it is, even though it is about this, like, this really horrific, it has this very horrific end, Rebecca Hall's performance as this woman, as Christine Chubbuck, is so is just so it humanizes that.
She's amazing.
She's amazing. Yeah,
it's heartbreaking and claustrophobic, and it gives you an idea of how tough it is to be that depressed.
Yeah, and it's just a really even though it has that ending, it's a beautiful movie to sit through, and just how much you feel for her is really incredible. And I like that it doesn't try to answer it. It doesn't try to ever answer why it happened. It just kind of paints her life in the month leading up, or the few weeks leading up to that event. Mm. Yeah.
Now you are, as it was referred to in one review, you are the dopey weatherman, and I wonder.
I have a niche. I have a niche. I can fill it.
That's dopey, what I was
dopey, fill dopey, fill in the blank.
When they see dopey in the script, they go, get a Simons, right?
Is Simons available? Oh, he's toxic, so yes.
And Michael C. Hall plays the news anchor on the station. Mm-hmm. Did you know him at all before, Tim?
No, this was actually Tracy Letts plays the station director. Michael C. Hall plays the
anchor, right?
The anchor. Mm-hmm. This was the first time I had met all of those guys, and it was they're amazing. It was it's an odd thing because every other character in that movie doesn't know that she's going to kill herself.
Right.
So we were essentially in a completely different movie than her, and we would joke around. We would have we would hang out. Maria Dizia plays a character named Jean, and she's incredible in it as well. But we sort of had moments of levity, and we could hang around the crafty table and make jokes.
You were doing a workplace drama, basically, about working at a small market television station and trying to get ratings.
Exactly. That is exactly what our world was, and hers was so much heavier. Mm. Like, her work day was so much harder than ours every single day. Yeah. And, then she comes into, just a bunch of jokers hanging around the peanut butter
pretzels. I'm trying to act over here.
I like the scene between you and Michael C. Hall when you're trying to insult each other on the air.
That
is crazy.
If you go back, a lot of the stuff that my character does is based directly off of videos of the real weatherman that station. If you Google Steve Newman, a lot of the things that we did are just Steve Newman's weather reports. He was one of the first people, I found this out, to do the weather in the weather. He would go outside of the studio, bring a camera. He would climb the radio tower and be like, it's a little sunny out
he
here
He was the
today.
Dumbass that started that?
He was one of the first guys that started that. Yeah. Wow.
So is that why today we have people interviewing people about what it's like when it rains?
Yes.
He's responsible for that.
And, how you staying dry today? He's one of those guys.
Yeah. Tell me about your world-class sideburns in this movie, Tim.
I'm going to tell you, I grew out some gigantic 1970s chops for this movie.
Oh, sweet. Those were real.
Those are real. Those are 100% American beef right there. And I will say, one of the I loved it. It works so well for the movie. It's a hard look in the grocery store on your day off. You can't escape them. You're constantly sort of tugging on them, and people are kind of like, hey, man, what's up with the chop? And they're like, oh, it's for a thing. And then you can't explain it. A woman committed suicide in 1970, you're just in it.
Yeah. I'm just going with Elvis. Yeah. I'm an Elvis impersonator.
Well, the film is called Christine. It opens this Friday in Los Angeles at the Sundance Sunset Cinemas, and you will like it very much. It is a very troubling and disturbing, but I think also important movie, and we haven't even touched on this, but before we break, Tim, a lot of people are saying this movie couldn't have come out at a better time while we are having all these discussions about what the news is supposed to be doing versus what it's doing, right?
Oh God, yeah. one of the subplots in it is the idea of chasing, if it bleeds, it leads, like that. That,
right.
That is one of the subplots in it. And
wrong. And, thank you, Donald.
And I think the idea, although it doesn't, again, I don't think the movie tries to answer that or solve that. I do think that it is part of the conversation of the film while you're watching it. And
check it out. It's called Christine. Again, this Friday at the Sundance Sunset Cinemas. All right, we'll talk Veep and more with our guest, Tim Simons, when we return right after this on K-Rock. Our friend Timothy Simons in studio with us here on the Kevin and Bean Show, talking about, among other things, his new film Christine in some theaters this Friday. Please check that out. And also, he's on a little show called Veep. And since the last time we had you in, Veep won yet another Emmy for Best Comedy on Television.
That is true.
Do you get one to take home as being part of that ensemble cast? Yeah,
no, I don't. They go to the producers.
Is it like the Stanley Cup? They just give you 1 day with it, 24 hours, then you got to give it back.
No, I will. When we won the first one, I always knew that we didn't get to keep a trophy. And like mm-hmm. you go up on stage and then you kind of get shuttled backstage and you do interviews as a group and you're hugging everybody and so the interviews are terrible. And then you go to this table where they just have. You know, 40 Emmys sitting there.
Right.
And I was the first one there, and they just handed me this clipboard. And I said, what's this for? And they say, you sign this, and then you get an Emmy. And I was like, oh, my God, I didn't think I got one. And they were like, why? I'm like, oh, I'm not a producer. And they were like, oh, then you don't.
Okay.
And then they took the clipboard back.
If only you knew that pre-clipboard.
But I knew that pre-clipboard, and then I was trying to explain to them that I knew that pre-clipboard, and that I wasn't assuming or trying to sneak one away. And then they were like, oh, no, we're done. No, it's fine. You can just go.
You don't care.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a bummer. That's
so unless you win one for a specific, as an actor for a role,
yeah.
You don't get one.
No, you don't.
Unless
get
you're
one.
A producer. I gotcha.
Yeah.
Is that night, I mean, what was your sense throughout the evening? Having won it previously, did you expect you guys were going to win it again? Because I felt like the room thought they were going to burn the place down if you didn't win it again.
I guess I'm a born loser. I guess I was just always like, I've never thought we'd had a chance. This was the only year I never thought you had a chance.
No,
even last
it was maybe your best season yet.
But I liked those first 3 years. People would be like, "Oh, I think you guys have a chance," and we lost like 3 years in a row. And I was like, "All right, well, we're not going to do this.
We'll be that show.
We'll be the one that
should have won but never did."
And that's fine. It's still really cool to be nominated. We all get to get dressed up, and we all hang out as a cast afterwards, and it's great. But no, I think even going into this one, this was the most hopeful I'd ever been. I was like, yeah, maybe. That was the most positive. That was me at a 10.
And I suppose after you do, when you're like, okay, well, that's it. We got ours. And then next year it'll be some other darling.
Yeah, somebody else will come up and then, but no, I think it's fun. Like two in a row. Like that's really cool.
Yeah.
And
it is really cool.
I've always loved the fact. I'm like, this is just like, I mean, like the awards and dressing up and all those things, like they are amazing, and it's really fun. I'm not trying to sideline that at all. But one of the best parts for me about Emmy Weekend is that it always marks us returning to work. It seems like it's almost like an opening party for us getting all back together and getting back into the rehearsal room and getting back.
And you
to
must
set.
Really miss those people.
I do
over the course of the break.
I do. Like everybody, like gets busy and they go out of town for work, and like we still remain close. Like our kids still hang out. We try to get together as much as we can, but it's nice to be able to just like to know you're going to see everybody pretty much every
day.
Does
it come back like next week or in November, early November, or when does it come back?
Is it on HBO again? You mean?
I think generally April. It's always been aroundish.
Is that unacceptable to you?
That's not cool.
2017.
That's not cool.
Next spring you'll see more of it.
It's worth waiting for, but I'd rather have it sooner if you could.
I'll just
step it all in.
When we're off air, I'll act out a couple scenes to your stand.
Oh, that'll be nice. That'll hold us over.
Yeah.
Now, Tim, this may be a tragic interview mistake for me to bring this up at
all.
Because we're all having fun and everything. But I want to ask, because we were so deeply moved as fans of Julia Louis-Dreyfus in her speech when she'd won, you know, and obviously she's one of the greatest actresses of all time.
Mm-hmm.
But then she dedicated the speech to her father had just passed like 2 days before. It was so emotional for us as viewers who don't know these people involved. I can't imagine what it was like for you as a cast, kind of rallying around your star, knowing how tough that speech must have even been for her to give.
It was. And I think I said this on the weekend that I can't imagine having to do that, having that many eyes on you under that circumstance. But if there's anything that knowing Julia for this long has taught me is that Julia can literally do anything. She is capable of doing anything. So I'm not surprised that she was able to successfully compose herself in
such grace.
Those moments with such grace.
That's crazy strength. Like I wouldn't have even shown up.
But it wasn't like she just got through it.
Right.
She handled it masterfully.
Yeah.
And it was an impressive speech above and beyond the courage it took her to kind of do it. You know?
Yeah. No, there's nothing that would surprise me about, like, you could say that she That she flew a helicopter into the middle of the ocean and saved a bunch of sailors from an overturned boat. And I'd be like, okay, well, yeah.
That's about right.
And then she was on time for work the next day. Like, what? she really is an incredible person. And I honestly can't imagine how hard that was. Just because even as somebody that, going through that weekend, even as somebody that's not at the front of a show, like, there are just eyes and cameras on you everywhere, and nobody cares about me, but even there's sometimes when you feel it there, and to have that many eyes on you going through that, I mean, it was incredible.
It's remarkable. Yeah. She's remarkable as a human and as a professional. All right, I have to ask you this as well, because we all laughed out loud when we saw your tweet a couple of weeks ago after the grab her by the pee remarks came out from Donald Trump.
Oh, Lord.
You went to Twitter and asked, what are we supposed to do now? Do we just shut down
Do we just shut down production? It's becoming like
insane.
As Julia said in her speech, we're now a sobering documentary.
Yeah.
The idea of, I don't know what we do with this. I think we just have to essentially ignore it and pretend that it's 2011.
Yeah, right.
That's the only thing that we can do. I think
you can't go crazier.
No, we can't. No,
if you acknowledge it, then you're chasing an ideal of satire that you'll never reach.
We'll never reach it.
But once you started Veep, how could you possibly have thought that this would come on like this?
I mean,
this whole thing is ridiculous.
We never live in
this. Who's
the
guy that got eliminated from politics because he went, wow!
Oh, Howard Dean.
That's all he did.
He made a noise. And
gone.
He was out.
And like the sort of like ingrained misogyny of like the binders full of women statement from even 4 years ago. That seems like a happy day.
Right. Yes,
comparatively,
I would vote for that man today.
Like,
I'll tell you that.
Like the first few seasons of our show, like the gaffes, what counts as a gaffe?
Right.
That we're now grading on this curve that doesn't even make sense anymore.
Yeah.
But I do think that generally, like, we are, as we're going through this season, like, there isn't going to be, like, a Trump character.
Good.
If we need, yeah, like, if you want, like, some funny Trump videos, they're going to be, they're on the internet by
noon.
They're
there. Exactly.
Honestly, you don't even need somebody to make a parody video. They're all, just watch him and it's all a parody.
Right.
But, so, yeah, somebody else is going to do that. So I think we're going to try to find
the writers must just watch that and go, come on.
That's one of the ideas I had. How could he possibly do that? It's just crazy.
You're stealing your playbook. I know you guys are. You keep it very close to the vest. You don't want to give away any secrets, and that's fine. But does Jonah stay a senator? Are we going to see him go through his first term?
Can't tell you that.
What's
wrong
tell us
with
that?
You?
Well, I can.
He
say,
was elected.
I'll say.
Does he become president
at the
before Selena?
Well, I changed my name to Donald. The J stands for Jonah. Donald Jonah Trump. No, at the beginning of the season, I'm a serving congressman trying to do the best for my country.
All right.
That's, yeah.
You're, by the way, I don't remember the last time we talked after it aired, but just to reiterate, your campaign commercials.
Oh, the best.
Yes. John H. Ryan's campaign commercials.
I remember Ralph played all of them during the showbiz. Yeah.
Were the greatest thing I had seen in a long, long time. The spot on quality of sort of that just off production value of local television mixed with politics was some of the sweetest things I'd seen on television in a
long time. Like the poorly animated eagles flying across the screen.
And the edit of you chopping the wood. They cut to the actual wood being chopped. It's just a hair off.
And also, if you look really closely, it's Sam's hands. It's a pair of African American hands because I could, like, you have,
because
you have
you
to go.
Because
I couldn't chop the wood.
What?
So That's like a deep cut. You have to go frame by frame to see that it's actually Sam Richardson's hands.
That's awesome.
There was a guy in Minnesota that made a commercial that was almost exactly like the Rugged Outsider wood
remember that one, the guy who walked in out of the water and everything, right? Wasn't he the guy who said he wasn't going to spend all the money at strip clubs and stuff? Is that the same guy?
No, different one. A guy,
oh,
he was like,
guy.
He like picks up an axe, is like, I'm going to chop out special interests and chops wood. Yeah, no, it's ridiculous.
Classic. Stuff. So good.
Well, I have bad news, you guys. We're out of time.
You're a bad person,
Veep. I'm sorry. It's not my fault, but we always have so much fun when Tim is here.
Tim, when Veep comes back, will you come in?
I will absolutely come in.
Okay,
I would be happy to.
And will you talk everybody else in the cast into coming in as well?
Yes, okay. We'll get them all in here.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah. Breakfast with Veep, is that what we're going to do?
Saying, maybe.
Let's do Breakfast with Veep. I'm so in love with Richard, by the way. He's like my favorite character of last season.
Sam Richardson, who plays Richard, is one of the funniest people that has ever lived and is a wonderful person to be on set with. So if you're out there, I'm toxic, I'm unhireable, hire Sam Richardson.
Let's get the Breakfast with Veep happening for next year. You guys.
For sure.
Seriously, let's do
and
that.
Go see Christine this yes. week. It's contrary to all the laughs and that we've had this morning, it's a very beautiful film, and Rebecca Hall's performance in it is masterful.
She is amazing.
She really is.
As I often say about movies like this, you are best served seeing it in a matinee if you can.
Yeah,
it's better to come out of this film when the sun is out and you can walk into sunshine than like maybe I don't know at a midnight screen or something. Try to see it during the day.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to sleep for a little bit.
Yeah, you have some thinking to do.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it. 106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You're listening to The Kevin and Bean Show at 9:44.
By the way, congratulations to Matteo Zatte from Santa Monica. Won tickets for Universal Halloween Horror Nights a few minutes ago. We got those for you all day long today. In fact, all week long here on K-Rock, starting at 9 a.m., going all the way up till 9 p.m. You can win those tickets, Universal Studios Halloween Horror Nights. Details at krock.com. Ralph is here now. Time for our final look at the showbiz beat for a Monday.
It's a Monday morning, so we take a look at the top 10 movies at the box office. The Accountant debuted with $25 million this weekend, making it the number one film in America.
I love that, by the way. And I'm a little bit afraid of Ben Affleck. A little bit. He can be great, but he can also not be great. And he was great in this.
I haven't had a chance to check it out.
Really good.
I want to see it just because J.K. Simmons is in it, and I think he's great and everything.
Amazing as well.
I just like the way he talks. So what are you going to do? You think you can do that? I don't know if you can do that or not. But maybe you'll find out. Kevin Hart, What Now? His comedy film debuted at number two with $12 million. Then Girl on the Train, Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, and Deepwater Horizon. Those were your top five films. 6 through 10, Storks, Magnificent Seven, Middle School Sully, and Birth of a Nation. Well, if votes were Halloween costumes, Donald Trump would be our president. Because according to everyone who knows this, it is the best-selling Halloween costume this year by far.
It's just words, folks. It's just words.
No, it's true, Donald. A Halloween adventure in New York City tells the New York Post that their billionaire tycoon mask, in quotes, which sells for $30, is outselling Hillary masks 40-1.
I am really proud. I am really honored.
The Trump wig, also a big seller. I've had to reorder the Trump wig at least three times in the last month, the store owner says. So everyone wants to look like Donald Trump this year. No one?
We have to figure out what's going on.
I think we know what's going on.
Sit down.
And Saturday Night Live was very funny. Alec Baldwin, speaking of Donald Trump costumes, took the stage once again for what was billed by the folks of Saturday Night Live as the second and worst ever presidential debate. They took many of the actual quotes from the debate back and forth between Kate McKinnon's Hillary Clinton and Alec Baldwin's Donald Trump, including this little quip, which I thought was very funny.
Martha, she is trying to silence these women, but they need to be respected. They need their voices heard.
What about all the women accusing you of sexual assault?
They need to shut the hell up.
Yeah. Shut the hell up. Donald Trump didn't like the show, however.
Oh, what a surprise.
You might be surprised that he tweeted out against...
He didn't respond to it, though, did he?
Someone who made fun of him, yes. Watch Saturday Night Live hit job on me. Time to retire the boring and unfunny show. Alec Baldwin betrayal stinks. Media rigging election. So
wait, hold on a sec. The media is rigging the election by doing what Saturday Night Live does, which is parody famous people?
Yes.
Oh.
Beamed?
Come on, get it together, man.
Don't be so naive.
Nothing you can do, folks.
Right?
Nothing you can do. Congratulations to Lindsay Lohan. She's got a new job. She's got a new career. She's now an entrepreneur. Bean?
I can say that word now.
Oh, I didn't know
he's
that.
Learned. I beat it. Oh, yeah, I beat it. Entrepreneur.
Wow.
He beat it.
She just opened a new nightclub in Athens, Greece.
What?
She just opened a new nightclub in Athens, Greece called Lohan.
Hot Tramps?
No, it's called Lohan. So now she's a nightclub owner.
So she's going to be a boss?
Yeah.
That's scary.
How great would it be to have her be your boss at a nightclub? Because you always know where the Coke is. That's true. It's in the manager's office. That, you know, you never have to wonder where to find it. She had a little help from her new man, Dennis Papagiorgio, who promoted it and helped her come up with the funding for the new nightclub. I think he's one of these billionaires. She likes the billionaires.
She does.
She does.
Dennis Papagiorgio. Wasn't that the kid's name from...
Webster?
No, Vegas.
Vegas Vacation.
Mr. Papagiorgio, wasn't he the guy? And the kid, Rusty, pretends to be
really?
Mr. Papagiorgio, yeah. And he's being comped everything, and he gets the car and everything. Don't you remember that movie? Vegas Vacation.
I love that movie.
I love it, too. Wallace Shawn is the blackjack dealer. Still makes me laugh. Why don't I just take you in the back and just kick you in the balls, and you give me all your money? Today's celebrity birthdays, comedian Norm MacDonald is 57 years old today. Mike Judge turns 54. Wyclef Jean is 47 years old. Ziggy Marley's 48. Eminem is 40 years old. Felicity Jones. Jyn Erso. Soon everyone will know that name. She's 33. And from the UFC, two fighters celebrate a birthday today. Holly Holm and Luke Rockhold. Holly's 35 and Luke is 32. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Take care off on your drive home. Listen to a commercial-free 5 p.m. hour here on K-Rock, a random act of helpfulness from the SoCal helpful Honda dealers. Tomorrow morning on all-new Kevin and Bean Show, David Mandel stops in. He is the showrunner of Veep.
Beep!
A show that maybe you heard we like a little bit.
Yeah.
Also, comedian...
By the way, David, also, writer for SNL, Curb Your Enthusiasm. I mean, the guy's got a pedigree in comedy. Goes way, way, way back.
And he's coming in to talk Star Wars.
Yeah, and he's a major geek. It's good times.
He is the founder of ISIS.
No, he's not. One thing he did not do.
And comedian Ralphie May will also join us in studio tomorrow morning.
Metro has a plan to ease traffic congestion.